Blog Talk Radio.
Last week, actually, on Friday, when my show was supposed to air, I started to come in, was doing things, because I knew my computer was, my hard drive is filling up. I don't have much space left on it. So I'm going to have to get me a new hard drive, get a bigger drive for this thing. But I couldn't get my microphone to work. I couldn't get anything to work. I tried to do a couple of things that, if, you know, audio files, they wouldn't work. And I still haven't gotten those to work. But at least I got my microphone to work, and hopefully it sounds okay tonight. Because, hello, bringing it, boy, good to see you there. But that is the reason I wasn't here on Friday, because I could not get my microphone to work, and I couldn't get anything else to work either. But I finally got my microphone to work, so at least I can do the show. The things that I wanted to use for audio files, I still cannot get to work. For some reason, I cannot get my microphone to match up with my audio, with my mixer and my computer at the same time to record them. So I don't have any of those tonight either. So, but I've still got a couple of things. It's good to see you there, Ron. Well, there's something you don't see every day. Yeah, the mic excuse again. President Joe Biden managed to make a mistake and be completely accurate on accident. As you well know, it's so-called Pride Month, which comes from a demon anyway, but Pride Month. Corporate logos go rainbow all month, unless customers start making a stink about it. Then they get quietly reverted. Money is donated to the LGBT-centric organizations. Media releases are full of stilted, meaningless jargon involving sexuality, gender, equality, equity, inclusion, safe spaces, values, etc., and are churned out like ChatGTP or GPT was working overtime writing them. And naturally, our somewhat glitchier president, who is indeed artificial but lacking the intelligence, got in on the action, holding a pride celebration on the South Lawn of the White House on Saturday. He said, according to a White House transcript, quote, "We're gathered here today to honor the extraordinary, and I'm not being solicitous. The extraordinary courage and contributions of the LGBTQ community to celebrate their legacy and their progress. And we welcome to the largest Pride Month celebration ever held at the White House, but just the beginning," unquote. Timing of Trump I'm sorry about that. They say pride cometh before the fall. But this is the White House, so pride cometh before the gaffe. The fall came during the president's appearance at the U.S. Air Force Academy's commencement ceremony, remember? He went on to say, "As commander-in-chief, I was proud to have ended the ban on transgender Americans serving in the United States military." Unquote. "I signed historic executive orders strengthening civil rights protections for," Biden continued, "before being distracted by something. He's running from me. I don't know where he is going," the president said. "Do that again, man. You're a sprinter. I don't know if he's running to something or from something. I don't know." It's unclear what this was all about, but apparently Pride Month is very important and urgent until the president sees a squirrel or something, maybe a chipmunk, further bulletins as events warrant. But it's worth noting that the White House's official transcript spelled the president's gaffe as transgender. Social media users weren't so kind, but somewhat more accurate. Kyle Becker says, watch, Biden accidentally coins legendary news phrase, transgender. The new Biden ad campaign brags, I barely managed to do what is expected of every president. Not only that, they gave him a tire to match. So is transgender a new pronoun? Well, Biden put it on his social media profiles? POTUS, transgender, /gaffe-prone. This is why the whole world is laughing at our leader. It's funny, of course, because there's more than a kernel of truth in the error. Just like every corporation's clumsy attempt to pay fealty to the idea that everyone's gender is what they say it is, the White House has made a fool of itself in June. And before this, for that matter, consider, after all, that Biden's Air Force celebrated Pride Month with a graphic showing a service member saluting not the American flag, but the LGBT pride standard. And then we have the drag shows on military bases, drag digital ambassadors trying to recruit people into the Navy, and a ship named after a slain gay rights leader, Harvey Milk, who was discharged from the service because at that time, homosexuality was against military regulations, among other performative sops to the LGBT community, the White House has thrown via the military alone. No matter what you think about guys in the military, naming ships after sailors who received other than honorable discharges because they broke the rules as they were when they were enlisted under their own violation, yes, Milk wasn't drafted, and he wasn't trying to pull a Corporal Klinger here. It isn't exactly setting a great precedence for the chain of command for respect for authority. But it's setting a great example for the rainbow-hued keyboard warriors who don't care about military readiness or the long-term effects of puberty blockers or anything that contradicts their worldview. To all these transgesters, the White House salutes you, if only accidentally. This is your month, unless, of course, swing state voters start noticing, then this is all going to turn down significantly. After all, you don't want Joe Biden joining that Bud Light VP behind the Mulvaney campaign on the unemployment lines now, do you? And actually, that's the way the article ended in Western Journal, and I have to add to that, because yes, I'd love to see him on unemployment. Trouble is, even if they got rid of him, he would still get paid on our dime for the rest of his natural life. And that is the reason that I see on this one, but I would love to see him just kicked out of the White House and then have him take the keys so he can't get back in. But welcome to the show. I'm glad you guys are all here. Sorry about missing on Friday. I will be back on Friday. I'm in the process of deleting a whole bunch of stuff off this computer to see if I can get the hard drive to start working the way it was before. Because I think on Thursday evening I was doing something and it said, you can't do anything more. Your hard drive is full. So that's the reason I wasn't here on Friday, but we will be right back.
But what we saw in that Senate today was a cowardly group of Republicans apparently have no option to.
Show me where it says that protests are supposed to be polite and peaceful.
Do something about your dad's immigration practices, you feckless.
When they go low, he kicks.
How do you resist the temptation to run up and wring her neck?
The biggest terror threat in this country is white men, most of them radicalized right on to the right.
I thought he should have punched him in the face. So even if he lost, he insulted your wife.
Yes.
He came down the escalator and called Mexicans rapists and murderers. He said, well, what do you think I should have done? I said, I think you should have punched him in the face and then gotten out of the race. He would have been a hero.
I'd like to punch him in the face. If I said we're in high school, I'd take him behind the gym and beat the hell out of him.
Punch some people in the face!
When was the last time an actor assassinated a president?
It's amazing how people try to frame everything racially, and how they create divisions among our society.
That's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
Welcome to hour number one of NWCR Radio with your host, Robert Garding. This is Duke Brooks of Radio Free Delmarva from 92.7 WGMD, Rehoboth Beach, Delaware. And I'm proud to introduce my friend Robert as we fight to protect the America we know and love. Through the silver microphone of freedom with the voice of reason in this unreasonable world, you're listening to NWCR Radio, broadcast through the CNM network in Albuquerque, New Mexico, from our Freedom Studio. And now, here's Robert.
I am back, and I also got somebody on the phone. I got, I think it's Joe from Montana. You there?
You think you're right, Bob. How you doing?
I'm doing good, at least better than I was on Friday.
What happened? Did something happen to your eye?
No, I was getting ready for my show. I think I start getting ready for it early in the morning, either early in the morning of Friday, or I do it Thursday night to find out what all is working on my computer, because I know that it's getting close to filling up on the hard drive. I've got to get a bigger hard drive on this thing. And Friday I was trying to do, or actually Thursday night I was trying to do audio files, and I could not get them to record. My microphone wouldn't connect to the computer through my mixer. It just wouldn't do it. And when I tried to get it to work in other ways, it wouldn't. So I had to cancel the show and try it for tonight. And I've deleted a whole bunch of stuff off the computer. So at least I got the microphone working tonight.
Yeah, you do. Did you get my email? Guess not.
No.
Let me tell you what the gist is.
Okay.
I gave you thanks for allowing me to be a host on the network, but I'm bowing out as the host, and I'm canceling all future shows starting with this Wednesday. So then I advised you to change the passwords. Okay.
Oh, okay.
All right. It shouldn't really be too hard, because you've got about 5 or 6 hosts that you can pass the new passwords to. And every time a new host leaves, you should change the password anyway. Yeah.
I'm sorry to see you go.
Oh, well, thanks. But I came to do what I came to do, and that's it. You know, and like I said in my first email to you, it's going to last only about a month or so anyhow. You know.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, I haven't even been into my email because I've been trying to fight with this computer and goof around with it. So that's one of the reasons why I didn't get into it.
Well, if you're having problems connecting, it's not just the hard drive. The hard drive by itself isn't any real problem. It's a system file. You have probably a lot of mess in the registry, and you have system files that don't need to be on your computer, and you need to download some software that will get rid of that stuff.
Yeah.
I recommend downloading a software called JetClean. That's what I use. It's free. Oh. You don't even have to pay for it.
That's my favorite four-letter word.
That's mine, too. Give it to me for free.
And that was the name of that was?
Jet Clean, like, you know, airline jet and clean.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'll check that out. I just found your email, so I just went in to see what was going on, because I've got a whole bunch of stuff in here now, which I didn't have before. But, I've got it, and I will read it and when I get through with the show tonight.
Sure. It basically says, I just said what it says, you know, that it's my thank you for having me as the host. I'm bowing out this Wednesday. I'm not doing a show, and for you to, upon my recommendation, to change the password.
Okay. Well, your co-host, is she looking to do a show or?
She has her own show.
Oh, okay. Well, that's cool.
Yeah, it's Lucy Libertarian. She's had a show. She's been on BTR for over a year now.
Oh.
So she has her own show. But if you want,
I think I found her show the other day, and I just was in the process of goofing around with other things, so I never got into it. But I'll have to check that out, too. Because I think I've been on BTR since, I think, something like about 2007 is when I first came on. And back then, you didn't even have to pay for anything.
That's what I was telling people before, because I've been on since 2008. I've been on shows and hosted shows that lasted hours. I was on one show, and the guy wanted to test BTR. So he had a show that was on for 8 hours for 3 days in a row.
Wow.
Yeah, those were the days, right?
Yeah, I remember when I first started my show, I could do as many hours as I wanted to, and I didn't have to pay anything, and then they changed everything, and that's when I started looking for a network to belong to, and I joined Conservative Nation Media in 2013, and so that got me going on that. So, and after they decided they didn't want to do it anymore and gave it to me, then I started thinking, well, okay, fine, I can pay the amount that they want for monthly stuff and get as many shows as I want. But it you know, and it really hasn't been that much. They've had me on a special deal for the last year or so, and that's probably coming to an end pretty quick. So I'm going to have to talk to somebody to see if I can get it to continue.
You might have to wait for another special.
I don't have that much. Yeah,
right.
Being retired, I don't have that much extra money to be around.
Yeah, I hear you. Yeah, and you have to be sure, too, that whatever shows that you have done since you've had it since 2013, that's you may be surprised at this, but your shows that have been, you can only download the shows that are no later than 2 years old. If you go back later than 2 years, to any show that's been on BTR. They'll have the name there. They'll have the page. You can upload the page the way it looked back then, but you won't be able to download the show that was back then.
Hmm. I haven't had that problem because there was a show that I had when I started doing, when I got Bing Fisher to start doing his show. He used to be on Blog Talk Radio, on CNM long, even before I was here. And I found one of his first shows and downloaded it and actually recorded a portion of it so that I could put it onto this show as an audio file. So, and I was able to do that. So, and that was probably about 5 or 6 years from when that show had happened.
So when did you do that, though? When did you download the show?
Oh, it was probably a couple of years ago.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. If you go back to shows that are longer than 2 years, 3 years and longer, you'll be lucky if you can find a show that you can download.
Well, we all of our shows also upload to Player FM. So they're all there. And I can go all the way back to the beginning or almost the beginning because I thought that for a little while they stopped recording. And I wasn't sure why, so I deleted about 12 of them from the very beginning. Those are no longer there, but, you know, I kind of wish I hadn't done it. But then I got a hold of Player FM, and something had changed, and they took my new information, and they're showing up again. So, and your shows are all there, and so is Vince's, and all the ones from the original CNM is there, too. So I can go back and get those. So that's really no problem, I don't think.
Well, for now, anyway, but what if they change their policy like Blog Talk Radio did? At one time, you could go back years and download shows from various shows, go back 4, 5, 6 years or so. But now, from what I've, from my experience, can't do it for longer than 2 years. So, you know, it's always good to have your own independent server if you need your own particular shows for archive material. Like, if you don't need them, you know, then you put them up on the cloud and, you know, whatever happens, happens. But, they do take up space. I don't blame BTR for deleting those shows. I mean, they have hundreds of shows that they have to archive every day, every hour.
Yeah.
And, that's a lot of storage.
Yeah, and you think about it, you know, even if it's just a one-hour show, that's still a lot of space that it's using.
Yep. At the minimum, it would be around 53 to 58 megabytes if they compress it properly. But that's an hour show. It should be even less than that. Yeah, should be even less than that. But even so, doing a few hundred a day, wow.
Yeah, at least a few hundred a day, yeah. And then it just amazes me how much space BTR has to have even 2 years worth of shows. It's like all of our shows end up on Player FM, so they're there under CNM. I also do like my updates in the day during the week, which I did one today, and those go on to Rumble and BitChute. So that's another one that has to have a lot of space. Rumble.
Sure.
So,
and then again, it doesn't even matter if you don't have your own private server, you most likely the 95% chance that you're using a server by Amazon. I didn't know this until a few months ago, last year. That Amazon owns 95% of the servers that hosts, that hosts use in order to rent out to their clients. So and Amazon isn't exactly what I would call friendly to conservative or libertarian values.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Yeah, so they could very easily just say, "Well, folks, we're new policies in place, and all your shows from the last 5 years, sorry, but you no longer have access to them." That's it. Thank you. Thank you for coming.
Well, like I said, I'm sorry to see you go. I, I have not been able to get to your show while it's on the air, but I do go back and listen to them. So.
Well, good. I don't like them. If you like them, then you have bad taste, because I don't like I didn't like the shows.
Well, I you know, being as I'm the right now the owner of CNM, I have a tendency to go in and listen to the shows to see, you know, how they are and everything. So that's part of what I feel I must do, since.
Well, of course, you have to know. Sure, you have to know that the host that you're you know, giving the space to, that they're producing some sort of quality program. I had no problems getting listeners. Didn't have any problems getting callers.
I noticed that the very first week you had quite a few, actually.
Sure. Well, I've been on BTR since 2008. I've hosted and co-hosted shows, and I go in and out. I might. Oh yeah, and I also told you in the email that in case you need somebody to fill in for a host who may not show up, you know, due to sickness or whatever, if I'm available, you know, you can always contact me, and if I'm available and if I can make it, then I will. But
that's good. I think that I think I've had about three or four hosts that have done my show when I wasn't able to. One of them was a friend of mine out of California who teaches the Constitution out there, which is really awesome, being as he's in California on the coast, by the way. He's in the liberal area. But he has actually got himself a business going where he teaches Constitution, and he goes up and down the coast and even up to Idaho and Montana and travels around and does that. So it's his name is Douglas V. Gibbs, and he's done this show several times. He used to have a show here on Blog Talk. Well, he might still have one. I don't know. He was calls himself the Constitution guy. He knows the Constitution pretty well.
I would really like to hear a debate between him and some other people who say they know the Constitution, because I'll bet you there'll be some fireworks there.
Oh,
there's
would be, yes.
Woo!
He actually was going to, this summer, was going to come into Albuquerque, and I was in the process of trying to find him a place that he could speak at. And I had him talking with my church, because my church does all kinds of things like that. They've had Charlie Kirk quite a few times over here.
Oh, yeah?
And they've got a big, big auditorium over there that holds quite a few people. And Charlie Kirk has done several shows, several meetings here. And they've always been right at my church. So we tried to get him in there, and something came up, and he wasn't able to get into Albuquerque. So that kind of was bad. That would have been cool to get him here.
Yeah.
Especially in this liberal bastion.
Right. Newsom country. Newsom country, if you go to Michigan or if you go. Do you know that if you take, I think, 15 of the democratically run states, they comprise more crime than, I think, the top three countries who have crime would beat them. But I think they would comprise the fourth largest country in the world with all the crime that's being committed in the democratically controlled states.
I know there's a lot of it here. As we have a mayor who likes to tell the illegals coming in that all they have to do is just put their tent up somewhere and they can stay wherever they are. And we've got them all over the city. They're just in parking lots and beside stores and everything else. And it's all down on Central. So, the neighborhood I used to live in, neighborhood, I used to walk to the store at 11 o'clock at night, no problems at all. You can't even walk around that neighborhood in the daytime anymore without getting yourself killed. So it's really changed.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
and the illegal, don't get me started on the illegals, because that's my favorite bugaboo besides the government corruption.
Me too. Yeah, me too, especially because New Mexico is one of the states with a border on it. And our governor, who I call the Wicked Witch of the North, she's up there in Santa Fe telling them all, come on in, come on in. We've got a place for you. And you know, only about two-thirds of this state, two-thirds of this state in land mass is conservative.
Uh-huh.
And the only part that isn't is like the big city, you know, like Albuquerque and Santa Fe, and then there's Taos up here, and all of that area is Democrat run, and those are the parts of the state that actually elect the Democrats in this state. The rest of the state's conservative, but nobody knows about that because
well, because the mainstream media.
Bastion. Yeah,
that's right. The liberal bastion. Them, you know, you might as well call CNN Pravda. Because
yeah.
Everything is Marxist run, it's communist run, it's Rothschild run, it's New World Order run. We don't have America the way that I knew it anyway.
No,
actually,
and I know my dad's probably rolling over in his grave. What's going on? So, it's
yeah.
But
what's happening
I'm
in America
actually,
is.
But I'm actually glad I got some things working on this computer so I could actually do the show tonight because. I did everything I could to do it on Friday, and it just would not work. I couldn't get BTR's studio to come up. I couldn't get my microphone to work. I couldn't get my nothing to work. So it was just, well, I had to quit it. So started deleting stuff. So, and things are starting to work now.
Yeah, sometimes it's your computer, but other times it's BTR too. Because I know of a person who has a show on Saturdays, and he uses a mixer to get into the studio and to have the show. And
mm-hmm.
most of the time, it's no problem. But there are times when BTR will just kick him right out.
Well,
you know?
it was mostly my computer, I think, because I use GarageBand to record my my audio files and my bumper music and the ads that I'm getting ready to put together a new ad because I've got another one that wants an ad on here, but I can't do it because I can't get GarageBand to connect with the microphone.
Hmm.
So, and that's that. So I know it's my computer.
And like I say, it's probably your system file. Do you ever use System Restore?
No, I've got a Mac.
Oh, you got a Mac. Well, they have the same thing.
So it's a completely different article. I think what's going on with this one, though, is I'm getting these messages. Your hard drive is full. So that's probably what
okay.
it is. And the last
yeah.
time I got this kind of thing, I actually replaced the hard drive and got a bigger hard drive. Well, now I want to get a 1 terabyte one, so that'll work out really good. But
yeah, I have a terabyte. And they have 2 terabyte ones too, but the thing is also, I'm sure on Apple, it's a feature in which, let's say you've got your computer, you've been running it for about a month or so. So I don't know about Apple, but with Windows, there are system files, and system files leave breadcrumbs, traces. They cloud up the registry, and I presume Apple has a sort of registry as well, and that can slow down your computer and really mess things up. Well, what System Restore does in Windows and what its equivalent does in Apple is that, let's say, you can always turn back the clock to, let's say, a month, 2 months, 3 months, whatever the time is, and the system it would go back to the way that it was. System files and the important files for the OS will be there, and the other files will be eliminated.
Mm-hmm.
So it will go back to prime condition again.
Yeah, well, that would be nice. But this computer actually is rather old. I think it's a 2011 model. So,
uh-huh.
And I've got a 2017, but it's got a 253 gigabyte hard drive on it, and it's already full. So I just can't even use it. It's too,
yeah, you need a terabyte.
Yeah, I need a bigger one. So. And once I get a new hard drive, I want to get hard drive on both of them. But once I get the hard drive and the new one, then I can start using it because I've got all my stuff on it too that I usually use for including GarageBand. So that's I also have another phone call here. It's 706. So I've got you on there if you're there.
Hey, it's me there, boss. How you doing today? What's up?
I'm doing good.
It sounds like Sarge.
It's the one, the only, the inimitable. Hey, look here, man. I got to tell you this, man. I saw the most deliciously entertaining yet horrifying movie I think I have ever seen since Aliens. You know what it was? What is a Woman by Matt Walsh? If you haven't seen the uncensored version that's available on Twitter, thanks to Elon Musk and his Twitter, you've got to see it. It is both enormously entertaining, informative, and utterly horrifying.
And yeah, I think you had talked about that the last time I had a show, and you had mentioned it, and I was going to get into it, and then I started having troubles with my computer, so I haven't seen it yet, but I plan to.
Well, I'm serious, and the reason it is because you have simply got to see him attempting to have a reasoned, measured conversation with these people who purport to be experts in the gender studies field and scientific sociological research of all types. And, you know, and the way when they are confronted with an objective truth, how not only do they turn evasive, they become hostile. Their fangs literally come out. You can see them back into the corner. You can, like, see their back arch. You can see the hair stand up, and their tails become erect and twitching. It is amazing to watch. It is literally like watching a metamorphosis right in front of your eyes. It is the most astonishing thing. And he asks them basic questions, literally, like, what is a woman? And literally, biological questions of basic, proven via the scientific method, biology. Their responses are worth the admission alone, the price of admission alone. The responses to these questions by these academics, it is just amazing. You've got to see it.
I'm going to have to see that. And do their tails get that little point on the end?
Everything. They literally undergo a transformation. A little transformation. You might say the outwardly they retain the same physical form, but behind them you can see the aura of what they truly are. You know, it escapes the shell they occupy, and you can see it revealed for what it actually is. It is like a form of incipient fanaticism manifested into something grotesque. You've got to watch it for yourself.
You must have a
listen to the questions he puts to them and listen to their responses.
Like I was saying, you must have some pair of eyes to see that aura.
Look, that's why I am telling you, don't believe me. Watch the documentary and you judge for yourself. It only takes a little bit of imagination. I don't really have that much in the way of imagination, honestly, and I could see it.
Well, you know, that's the one thing that, you know, I have called the Democrats demonobrats for a long time, so.
It's the monobrats.
Demonobrats.
Yeah. When you were saying horrifying about, and then you mentioned the title, Sarge, I presume that the kind of issue that you were going to get into that was horrifying was going to be about the basics of what a woman is.
That's not what was horrifying. What was horrifying was the rejection of basic objective truth. I mean, that was what was the most horrifying of it. The attempt at sophistry over things that are basic and elemental. That was what was horrifying. And then the outrage, and it wasn't feigned. It wasn't feigned outrage. It was legitimate outrage. They were legitimately outraged at being asked basic questions that they did not want to answer or they wished to be evasive about.
Well, they do the tap dance. You know how it is with people.
No, it was more than a tap dance. I'm telling you, you got to watch it.
It wasn't just a tap dance.
Tap dance. These people seem to be possessed by something demonic. They need exorcism.
What website is it on? Is it on Rumble?
It's on Twitter. You can watch it on Twitter. I mean, the uncensored version is on Twitter.
Okay.
Now, he went to a tribe in Kenya, the Maasai. I'm sure most people have heard of the Maasai.
Well,
they're very tall,
yeah.
Elegant people.
Maasai.
They do a leaping dance, and they herd and all of that, you know.
Yeah.
The Maasai. And so he went to the Maasai to ask about what is a woman. And they looked at him. They looked at him when he was asking these basic questions, and they're answering it according to the lights of their culture. They literally had trouble comprehending these things like binary and gender fluid. And all. It was amazing to watch them come back with these answers that were, you know, unleavened by modern cultural sensibilities, simply a response to what they have been living with for millennia, observing men and women. And, you know, and Jordan Peterson gave one of the best explanations for all of this fall to roll that I've ever heard in a long time. Jordan Peterson said that you're really talking about a range of temperaments because many women have a temperament that tends toward the classically masculine, and many men have a temperament that tends toward the classically feminine. You're really
mm-hmm.
talking about a range of temperaments among human beings, which we all know exists, and they have transmogrified that into this new form of an ethnic subgroup called transgenders. And they are literally saying that to correct the phenomenon of mental illness in people with perfectly healthy sexual organs, whose transgender is something wrong with them and they need to have them mutilated, they are saying that, that to correct that mental illness is a form of genocide.
Yep. Well, you know, that's
I've never seen anything
that,
like this. I'm sorry. I just haven't.
That's the one thing that Biden did this week. I started my show with it, and he made a mistake while speaking the other day. I think it was on Monday. He was talking about the Pride Month and everything else, but he mentioned something, and he, instead of saying, let's see if I can find this again. It was really funny. But he had talked about, he was talking about all the things that what the media talks about with and LGBTQ and all this, is sexuality, gender equality, equity, inclusion, safe spaces. And he said something, and I'm trying to find it now. I cannot find it for the life of me, but he actually called them transgesters.
Transgesters?
Yeah, this addle head, no telling what sort of new words he's going to come up with. He's addle.
Okay, I found it.
Man's addle, man. I would say at least, I don't know, 45%, 40% of his cerebellum is not functioning.
Yeah, it says, here's the quote. It says, and this is a quote, it says, as Commander-in-Chief, I was proud to have ended the ban on transgender Americans.
Of course. He's getting to be like, I don't know, who's that guy? He's like Professor Wendell Corey of the presidency.
Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, he really is, man. I'm telling you, this guy is a hoot. If he wasn't so dangerous in the position he's occupying, so utterly destructive and turning the country into absolute laughingstock, and while at the same time he's destroying the most fundamental aspects of it, he might just be amusing. He might be amusing to watch. It might be fun. Like the Three Stooges or something, or Charlie Chaplin. But it isn't funny.
Sarge, were you on Sally's show when I made my little announcement?
I think I might have missed it because I had to go in, and I was driving at the time, you know.
Oh, okay.
And I got a big old SUV. I love big old SUVs, and I got to shift gears. And I'm going to the gears, you know, it's kind of noisy.
Yeah.
I can hear things, you know.
Okay, here's the announcement. If you want to go to my show on Wednesday, you're not allowed.
Okay.
You know why?
I know when I'm not wanted.
You're not wanted. You know why? Because I ended the show. I'm no longer a host anymore. I terminated
what?
The I terminated it.
Okay, I thought you seemed to be doing rather well. You seemed to be garnering a fairly good why did you decide to do that?
Yeah.
Well, I'm as Bob knows, I only intended it to be a limited show anyway, a limited series, only about four or five shows that I was going.
That's the test run, in other words, right?
That's
right. You mean it was the test run?
I was kind of sad when I found that one out, but that's, you know, he did tell me.
Oh, come on, Joe, you're kidding me now. It was a test run, right? I mean, you're not serious, are you?
Oh, no, I am serious. It's no longer there. I terminated it. I thank Bob for having me as a host on the network. And I covered the topics I wanted to cover. I didn't like any of the shows. And I have other things to do. And I do this every once in a while.
Reconsider by popular demand? Would you reconsider?
Not right now, I wouldn't.
Like a politician. You can do like a politician. That's how politicians are, you know.
Yeah, I know. Liars.
You can do that too, Joe. Come on, man. Do a little tap dance. I'll be just saying a minute.
Yeah, here's the Fauci tap dance.
Look at a little Jimmy Cagney.
Here we go. I'm going to do a Jimmy Cagney because he used to be a hoofer. If by popular demand, no. After a couple of months pass, after I finish doing what I'm going to do, then possibly. But I do this every once in a while anyway. I go in and out. I do a show. It lasts for a limited time. Then I leave, do my own thing, and then I come back if somebody's willing to have me be a host or a co-host. So right now I did what I wanted to do, and I'm gone. But I would like to come back sometime 2 months from now, but no sooner than 2 months from now. I got things to do.
You're just taking a hiatus then.
That's it.
Wait a minute. So then you're misleading us. You're not actually ending the show. You're just taking a sabbatical.
No. Well, a sabbatical, if you want to put it like that, but it's not a definite sabbatical. Sabbatical means you're definitely coming back. I'm not planning on returning if Bob wants me to and if I want to. Sure. That would be cool. But the thing now is that, right now I have the show is canceled. You cannot go to the show on Wednesday. And I told Bob to change the password so that for security purposes. Because otherwise they're hijacking. They're a hijacker of the Block Talk Radio. We've been around, Sarge, you, me, and Bob have been around since at least 2006, 7, and 8. I've been around since 2008. Correct. Bob's 2007. And you for over a decade as well. We know about the trolls. We know about the people who dox you, and we know about the hijackers. So we got to be very, very concerned about security.
I see. All right. Well, as the Cylon said on Battlestar Galactica, by your command, whatever it takes.
Yeah.
Man, I enjoyed the shows that you put on. They were very challenging, stimulating. You kept an orderly house, and I think for that you should be complimented.
Bob, if you ever listen to the shows, that's the way I like to have it, but I didn't even do it as well as I wanted to, and only someone like Sarge would actually appreciate the way that I've handled the show, because I had to interrupt people to try to get down to the nitty-gritty, and I didn't want to do it as dictatorially as I would have liked to, because there are people who I know for years, and I didn't want to step on their feelings that badly.
You got to understand, as you well know and have pointed out to me on several occasions, I can be rather obsessive. Now, I'm going to admit to that. That's the reason for that is because I've been, as a police officer, I've had to engage in brawls. I mean, brawls, I mean, literally, life and death brawls, all the rules are off. There's no rules. And then at the same time, I used to box, where the rules are very structured and very strict. So I adapt myself to whatever environment I happen to find myself in. If people are engaged in rules, then I behave and conform according to the rules. If I'm in a brawl with no rules involved, no marking of Queensberry, it's bayonets, rifle butts, and dressing tools as far as I'm concerned. So, it depends on where I'm at. Now, if I was drunk, I'm going to conform to whatever that environment is.
But it's not only just that, Sarge. You're one of the few people on Blog Talk Radio who will not mind being questioned because you have facts due to your research to back it up. Other people will find it very offensive by my asking very direct questions. And over time, that could lead to, could lead to a brawl. And if I weren't the host and the moderator, it definitely could lead to a brawl. But since I was the moderator, it wasn't going to lead to any type of brawl. But people who know their facts don't mind answering questions. And even if they don't know the facts, if they haven't done enough of the research to come up with enough of a good fact to present to the question, you just say, well, I'm not you know, I'm not prepared to answer at this time, or I don't really know, or I'll do a little bit more research. But other people, they want to pull out the bay that you're talking about. They want to pull out particle beams. They want to pull out.
Man, let me tell you something. You know, the one thing I have learned, the more I learn, the more I know that I don't know enough, and I need to know more. So I don't have any objection whatsoever, ever, to saying, when somebody asks me a question about which I have no answer for, I don't know. I have no objection at all, because I don't pretend to know everything. But I tell you one thing. If I tell you I know something about something, you better believe I'm at least fairly well informed on it, if not superbly so. I realize there's a lot more that I need to know that I don't know than I will ever learn before I die. It ain't possible.
Right. But I mean, that's
I'm going to engage you on something. You better watch out and you better be prepared, because iron sharpens iron. And that's why I want to be challenged to the maximum extent possible. I believe that when you are challenged, you have to get down. You have to be ready. Yeah, you got to bring something to get something.
Yeah. You just said iron sharpens iron. Yeah, if you're in a duel with somebody whose mind is of iron. But if iron is not going to sharpen wool or paper, okay? All it's going to do is cut through the paper.
Maybe. But look, I think truly the kind of humility I think everyone should adopt is that no matter how well educated you are, I really run with some really well, classically educated, brilliant people who know infinitely more than I do. But even the best of them will admit they don't know enough about what they need to know, because it's just too much to know. And nobody got to get a grasp. Maybe Jesus Christ might have a grasp on everything. There isn't a need to know. I don't know. That's what they say. Who am I to doubt?
But they're right. But they
are Joe?
Right. Yeah, Bob.
Luann's in the chat room.
Who? Who
your,
is?
Your co-host for your show, Lucid Libertarian.
Oh,
Lorianne.
Okay. Yeah.
What's she doing on in the chat room? Why don't you get her ass on the show?
Well, yeah. I've got another person on the phone right now. I've got
that might be her.
Yeah, it might be her, and I'm not yet. Whoever it is hasn't said anything yet, but I've got them on, and they're a Skype number, so it's one.
Well,
one
that's
yeah, this is Brother Warren, host of New Orleans Wake Up.
Right side.
Oh, okay.
Oh boy. Okay. I wish this. Okay.
Here we go again.
The prophet of truth has entered the discussion.
Okay. But I know she's
don't
in there.
Don't tell me Bob Warren sends it himself.
Anyway, is this an announcement and that's it? This is a revelation. This is like nothing I never expected out of here. Silence after that.
I know. He must have dropped off.
Introductory build-up? Wait, there's this big introductory build-up?
You guys don't have to be intimidated when I come in the room. I mean, I'm not going to bite or hurt anyone.
Well,
I'm
now you just intimidated me. You just did. That just intimidated me, because now I don't know what to expect.
Here we go, folks. If you haven't heard this before, Bob, sit back and tighten your seatbelt. Oh, boy.
I got my seatbelt on, I'll tell you what.
Okay.
Yeah, man, I'm frankly flabbergasted. See, when somebody, when you're used to certain tactics and you don't see them, you know, you gotta drop back and take a wait and see how to say, what's up with this? There's something on you. Like, it's too quiet out there, too quiet. No, there's any cowboy movement for the engine start to attack. It's too quiet. Why are they so quiet all of a sudden?
Yeah. Hey, oh, by the way.
No, man.
You know
I like
to, I'm inviting you to my Wednesday show. Okay? Hope you're the first guest.
I'll be the first one to end. What time doors open?
9 o'clock. Here goes.
Okay.
There you go. You'll be the first one there.
Okay. All right.
Even though it's not going
to
be there.
Oh, it's good
to
be kept off balance. You know what I mean? You know, you can't get too comfortable. You get in a rut, and the next thing you know, when you get in a rut, next thing you know, you find yourself easily outflanked. You got to be careful with that. This is good. This is good.
Right,
I appreciate it. I appreciate it. I do.
If their maneuvers change, you got to change with them.
Exactly. Flexibility is all.
Oh, this is
and
great.
And you were about to say, Bob, even though the show isn't on anymore, he's still invited, right?
Well, I have another one on the phone right now, 417.
That might be Lori Ann. Okay.
Okay, 417, you're there.
Nope.
How you doing? Good evening.
Good
How
evening.
How was everyone? Hey. Excellent. I'm liking your show. It's pretty cool. it's my first time calling in. And I figured I'd kind of get into this conversation because I'm finding it pretty hilarious. I understand you guys were talking about the Pride Month or something like that earlier. I don't know what they're proud of. I really don't know that. I'm trying to look for some insight on what they're really proud of. Do you guys have any understanding of that? What that might be, what's proud of? I don't get it.
Oh, well, you know, one of the things that I brought up on my show a couple weeks ago was if you take Pride Month and take the PRI off the front of it and the TH off the end, what do you have?
I don't know. I'm not literate. I can't really tell you. I don't know.
Wait, so you take the PRI out of it, front, and what do you take off the back?
The TH.
The TH.
Mm-hmm.
ID?
You like the month? So we take Pride, you say D-E-M-O, well, okay, demon.
Boy, this show got quiet since I called in, isn't it? Wow.
Yeah, I'm glad that topic was brought up because what I was thinking was, yes, I have my concerns about many aspects of what is called the LGBTQ movement, the fight for trans rights. But this is the reality we all have to recognize. Regardless of our disapproval of it, we can't put the genie back in the bottle. Gay people are around us. We have gay people in our families. So we can't go back to a time where you didn't talk about it. You have to live with it some kind of way. Yes, we could struggle back and forth as to whether biological male should be allowed to compete in female, at least. I can understand that dispute. But the idea that a person who is gay and trans, that we're going to put them in their place and some kind of way persecute them, that's just out the question. We're not going to put that genie back in the bottle. We can't go back to the colonial times like the Salem witch hunts and stuff like that. And I think that's what conservative people or people who call themselves conservative don't understand. You cannot revert back to a time where you have a hierarchy and certain people who are supposed to be at the bottom remain at the bottom. It's just not going to happen.
Nope. And that's for sure.
Now, you see, that's Brother Warren's old subtle way of trying to start an argument because he's trying to accuse conservatives of something. I'm not a conservative. I'm a libertarian, and I can tell you as a libertarian, I have no problem with anybody coming out of any closet proclaiming themselves to be anything that they want to do, that they are, and do what they want to do as long as they don't encroach upon the rights of other people. So if a person wants to come out and be a drag queen, a transvestite, change their body, from a guy to a girl, they can do it. I don't care.
I believe there should be some restrictions of that. Here's my point on that one. Children shouldn't be a part into this at all whatsoever, which they have done that.
They have done that, yes.
So that is pedophilia.
That is
a crime of nature, and I believe it's a crime, myself personally. This is Ron Redd from Crazy Nation Radio. Who I am. But the thing with me is I simply just object to that whatsoever. If people want to be gay, knock yourself out. I don't care what you do. But when it comes to you dragging this shit to these schools and trying to indoctrinate these children this bullshit, then I got a little bit of a problem. That's something I think that needs to be really taken a look at. You know what I mean? Why is this happening?
Well, look, no one has appointed me spokesman for anybody but me, and I'm speaking only for myself. But when I've studied a great deal about the public conversations about this issue, a great deal, and it seems to me the great majority of what is being discussed are matters of public policy. Being a person who believes in individual liberty myself, as long as what you are doing is legal in between consenting adults, it is none of my business. But when it comes to matters of public policy, pedagogy, and the like, then I get a say-so. And so does every other citizen who's concerned about it. When it comes to men being competing against women on sports teams, when it comes to public policy in matters of bathrooms, when it comes to public policy in matters of education, particularly children, minor children's education, and their pedagogical input for them, then we get a say-so on that. And that's what most of this discussion is centered around. Not on whether or not we wish to impose our values on anyone else, because I don't hear that much of that. There is some of that, but it's not most of it. Most of it is on exactly what I just got through speaking to.
And I totally agree with you on that one. It's like when stores like Target or, I think Target came out with a thing where they were saying that transgenders could use the bathroom of their choice at one point in time. And at that point in time, I had my daughters with me, and we went into Target, and I stood at the bathroom door to make sure nobody went in when they were in there. It just wasn't going to happen.
You know, I think that's part of marketing. I really do, with Budweiser, too, or Anheuser, but the Bud Light deal, I think that's all part of marketing. They're trying to market this shit, because I think there's a big, mass wave. They're getting a big, massive wave of people to be transgender and change their sex. And a whole bunch of people are going to be in a market for this. And what they actually, well, you see what happened to Bud Light. You see that? Look what's happening to Target. Same thing. They're trying a marketing ploy, and it's not working out for the best interest. It's really not.
But there's also something that's even more ominous that I think we need to have much more discussion about, and that is the idea of imposing civil and or criminal penalties on people for simply not using the appropriate pronouns. I'm not making this up. I'm serious. There are serious initiatives being conformed, and also the idea of taking away children when parents object to minors having so-called gender-affirming medical treatment to include puberty blockers and transformational surgeries. Now, that is even more ominous, and again, those are matters of public policy, not personal preferences.
And the problem is these kids are also being groomed in schools to where they have these ideas that maybe I might like to be a girl sometime or whatever. Those are thoughts that should never occur to a child.
I don't disagree with a lot of the things you all say about certain things being pushed. However, there are things in our face that you all are not paying attention to. For example, in the prison system, the United States have the largest percentage of its population in prison than anywhere on the planet. In the prison, the males, in many of these prisons, you have high rates of sexual assault. So these inmates who serve time for whatever begin a habit, let's start with the males, begin a habit of having sex with males. When they get out of the prison, they come back into the communities and introduce that habit in the families and the neighborhoods. So you have a lot of this stuff being introduced, what we call homosexual behavior, from the creation of the American prison system, because the prison system hasn't developed ways to address rape, sexual assault in prisons. Okay? Mm-hmm. So number two, among, for example, since this is all put on what we call the liberals, this kind of behavior for some reason is attributed to liberals, we don't look at the hypocrisy of people on the right. The guy that was over this Republican or conservative organization that worked with Herschel Walker's campaign, who one of Herschel Walker's campaign aides was driving with this guy. This guy was making passes at him. I can't think of his name. I mentioned it on my show. You have all of these guys in conservative organizations who themselves are homosexuals and hypocrites. So even being a self-righteous Christian conservative, you have homosexuals who at the same time condemn homosexuals. So you have this hypocrisy. That got to be dealt with.
Okay, now I've got a lot of experience with recidivist prisoners, people who I've locked up myself as a police officer, dealt with them after they got out of jail, talked to innumerable corrections officers over the course of my career, and I can tell you for a fact, well, not for a fact, but to a certainty, based on my experience and what I have studied, most of the homosexuality among most of the inmates in prison is situational. It almost entirely ceases, or in fact entirely ceases, when they get out of the joint. And the people for whom that remains a permanent lifestyle choice is people who are homosexuals before they went to jail, and they'll
you
be that.
You have no data on that, so
it is mainly
situational,
permanent alteration in their sexual behavior.
Sarge, you have no data on that. When you develop a habit, it becomes a habit. So if you're locked up in jail for 15, 20 years, and you as a male been having sex with another male with his anus, you have that habit when you come back in society.
Again, I have no data. I do.
It's a habit. Okay.
No, I have a data. It is mainly situational. While they're in jail, they need a relief, and that's how they get it. They eschew it entirely, for the most part, when they're out of jail.
And from what I understand, let's say 98% true, because I have read about that. On TV, this kind of situation has been presented, and the people who do engage in that, most of the time, they just want to show dominance. Brother Warren, where is your data that whoever gets out of prison, once they've engaged in homosexual behavior in prison, automatically, or for the most part, brings it back to the community?
Here's a lot of anecdotes from the people in the community, young kids who've been raped by people in their families who were in jail, and people in the neighborhood who rape boys. And females as well, females who have been in prison as well. Many bring these behaviors to the community and introduce them to the young people.
Not that anecdote.
It becomes a habit. It becomes a habit like smoking and drinking.
Okay, not that anecdotal evidence is worthwhile. But there has to be enough of it, enough empirical evidence, in order for it to be statistically significant. You may know 5-6 people, okay? They may be, out of 100 people in the United States, 6% of the people who have done this. How do you know? What's the percentage of people, not that you know, but overall in the nation, of people who come out of prison who have engaged in anal sex and then bring it back to the community?
I don't think it's a very high percentage.
I wouldn't think so either. Well, I don't know, so I'll just wait until the evidence
comes. I have a bit of data, in fact, in my library, which I know some people have denigrated as my library's only comic books, but I have a study called Sex in Prison, Myths and Realities, from Rainier Publishers, Boulder, Colorado, 2016 study. And it details sex as mainly situational. Let's not forget, we talk about prisoners. We're talking about a segment of the policy to a great extent that is, conditionally deviant from the normal population anyway. They're criminals. Most of the people are not criminals. So in most, many respects, people who go to prison are deviant anyway from the norm. Among that people, most of the homosexuality is situational that largely ceases when they get out of the correctional institute.
Sarge, it's not just homosexual behavior. It is becoming sexual predators in the community after having come out of these prisons.
Because they're criminal. I don't think it has to do with them being homosexual.
Hold on. Wait a minute. That sexual predator behavior more than likely may have been created while in prison, because they may have been victims of sexual assault. So like victims of sexual assault, you often many times practice that on other people like a cycle. Just like in a Catholic church where you have priests, just like in a Catholic church where you have priests who molest people, and then those people, as has been identified, molest people as a result of having been molested.
I have a question. I have a question about the homosexual aspect of it. How does a man, regardless of whether they're deviants, have criminal behavior, they have trauma, et cetera, how does a man, how does a person get aroused, a man in particular, to do somebody's butt without having some kind of homosexual tendency to begin with, is what I want to know.
Because, sir, when you're in prison, it's just like a ship. Let me give you two analogies. Because I've read accounts on ships, sailors, particularly Europeans traveling around the world. Those guys, not having any women around, begin practicing homosexual behavior with each other on these ships on the high seas. The ship, ship is a laboratory. A ship is a laboratory for all kind of observations. In a prison, you don't have, if you're a male, generally you're around, definitely you're with males, and you have, number one, you have sexual assault that takes place. Number two, you have natural urges and needs even without sexual assault. So you add sexual assault cycles, you add the natural urges.
Right, I know. What I want to know is, what you're saying is that men then have latent homosexual feelings and don't even know it. Because then, without prison, without being on a ship, they're not attracted to men. But once they get into a situation with
a... Joe, I have a show I did. So listen, I have a show that I want everybody to listen to. It's a
finished. Hey, Warren. Warren, I haven't finished. Okay.
All right. Okay.
So my thing is, do men, according to what you're saying, maybe to some sociologists, I don't know, do they believe that men have latent homosexuality only to be presented and manifested if they're around other men in a confinement situation, or... are these men just plain homosexuals and just didn't let anybody know about it?
I have a book right here. I did a show on the book. The book is called Not Gay, Sex Between Straight White Men, how you have this culture of straight white men who just have sex with each other and say that they're not gay. Okay, I did a whole show on that. And there are books published on that.
Okay.
And this is one of the
women for up to 4 months at a time. I loved my brothers in combat, and I was not sexually attracted to a single one of them, not one of them. For 4 months at a time, we would see no women whatsoever. We lived in intimate circumstances, and I don't ever recall once having an intimate thought about them sexually, and I don't think any of them had the same feelings for me or any of our
In the Navy. In the Navy.
I don't know if it makes a difference for any young men in any group.
In the Navy, there are rituals, okay, where guys pull each other's pants down and all that kind of stuff.
That's kind of a joke,
okay. This is very well documented.
That's actually going on now because nobody's doing anything about it. Nobody is enforcing the rules that are there. They're letting them be changed. That's what's going on today, is the rules are not being enforced.
Right. And that means, that means that people who have homosexual...
the basic question that Warren is presenting, or what he seems to be presenting, that is whether or not there is an implicit desire or a latent desire of men of suppressed homosexuality. That is a question
that I don't think there is.
Among the general population of men,
I'm presenting you with data on that. Okay, you have traditions in this culture where straight men engage in same-sex behavior and say they're not gay. Look at this tradition of going to the rest stops on the highways where gays and people meet in the bathrooms and the holes in the walls, all this little kind of stuff. All right? That's an American tradition.
But the operative word, though,
politicians have been busted in the bathrooms.
That's an American tradition?
Yes, it's an American tradition.
I mean, it's a bit of a football game. Homecoming football tradition. It's up there with that.
They offer the phrase that they say they're not gay. Of course they're gay, and they're saying they're not gay.
Well, but the point is,
they have very.
I want to get back to that habit part. I'm really curious about the habit part. Okay, you stated, Warren, that when they come out of prison, they accumulate this habit of being homosexual, having, you know, rectal sex or whatever. But here's my question: is it as hard to quit that? Is it as hard to quit smoking cigarettes? I gotta know. I really need to know.
Well, you know, a habit is like any habit. It's hard for people to kick. When you're in prison, you have nothing else to do.
Okay.
So you lock down for 10, 15, 20 years, maybe less, and then guys are having sex with guys. Hell, when you get out of jail, you may see women, but now, hey, ain't no big deal if you do with another guy. That's what I mean by habit.
Okay?
You have these people coming back into society.
Can you quit cigarettes just because you quit having sex with a man? I mean, I don't see the habit part. It's a mental issue, and I can't see it being a technical habit. You know,
habits, when you look at habits and the difficulty in people breaking habits, you learn that there's a mental component, a psychological aspect to it, not being able to break the habit.
I just can't see how it can become a habit. You know what I mean? Because one, if a person is an abused person would become an abuser after going through a traumatic part of their life?
You're in a state, Ken. You know what you may have read or heard firsthand from people what the culture is in these state penitentiaries. One of them is men pick on other men to have sex with. They pick girlfriends.
I'm not denying that. But here's the other fun part now. Now we got these transgender men getting put into women's prison, and women are coming up pregnant. Why is that? That's another fun question. Why is that happening?
Two of the most famous novels in American literature, James Jones, a great author and observer of Army life, in The Thin Red Line and From Here to Eternity, addressed the homosexual tension that he observed when he was in the Army, both in the peacetime Army before World War II and during World War II in combat. So we know it's there. I'm not denying that it exists. What I am questioning is how widespread it is, according to the likes of Brother Warren. Now, there is where I draw the line. I'm not denying it exists, and I will fully concede to you that it does. I do not think it is widespread, and I do not think it is even a significant minority of men who are willing to engage in these behaviors.
Well, here's the thing. Well, first of all, I put in the chat a link to the show I did on that. You got, in fact, it's a woman who wrote the book is doing a presentation on the book she wrote, and many of you guys will understand what she's saying because you have witnessed this, you have if not participated in a lot of this stuff that you know exists and go on. When I was a kid or coming up, I wondered why certain people did certain things that seemed to me to be gay, but for other people they were doing this like it was normal. They never said they were gay. I never understood a male putting another male's pants down in a locker room and all this whole kind of mess, okay? But apparently this is some American tradition been going on in fraternities, in the Navy. They got all kind of hazing and rituals when men play with other men and they're not supposed to be gay.
Yeah, but if they're doing it, they are. That's...
Yeah, and I doubt if there are any official hazings or rituals
you'll be very surprised. You'll be very surprised what's going on in these fraternity houses with these white guys and stuff like that. You'll be very surprised.
I'm not surprised about that. They would have it in secret if they're going to. But you were talking about the armed services. So if the Navy,
in the Navy, that's very well documented with the rituals that go on in the Navy with this kind. Listen to my show.
Were they approved or were they done surreptitiously?
What you don't understand, sir, is this has been part of male, particularly white male American culture. That's fine,
straight
but
men
not the
engaging,
to my question.
Straight men
yes.
engaging in what we would call homosexual behavior with each other.
But you
okay,
didn't answer the question.
Yeah. So what's the answer to the question?
What was the question, sir?
The question was, were they done via the approval of the Navy, or were they done surreptitiously? These rituals that made men have sex with other men.
Well, I don't think that they were given approval by the Navy, but
now,
the fact that everybody knows.
Uniform Code of Military Justice, sodomy was an offense under the Uniform Code of Military Justice and the Articles of War, so it couldn't have been.
There you go. So it was done mainly for people who already had a predilection towards, you know, male for male, female for female, and it was done undercover. No pun intended.
That's all I got to say is this, gentlemen. That is an area of research in books of straight white males who say they're not gay engaging in sexual activity with each other. That's an inquiry
well, you know,
of research in
the court martial offense in the Navy, the Army, the Air Force, every branch of the service until very recently. A court martial offense.
Mm-hmm. I do know. But, you know, the problem is if they're having sex with each other, they are not straight. Period.
No, I hear what you're saying. I hear the argument but what, according to the researchers, these are people who say they are straight, that there is a subculture among straight white men where they engage in what
but
we
you're
call
saying
homo-
just white
sexual.
Men, right? It just white men.
Yes,
white
yes,
men have
yes,
nothing to do with anybody else.
That's what these studies.
Okay.
That's what
okay.
these studies
right.
and books are focusing on. Because guess
okay.
what? As a black male, we ain't never do no crap like that. Playing with other males, like I see how you guys have been done over the years, pulling people's pants down in the locker room, slapping another guy on the behind, and all that kind of stuff. That's foreign to me.
Wait a minute, Doesn't the black community have an expression called down low?
Yeah, they do have that expression, down low. But guess what? Who were the first down low with the holes in the walls in the bathrooms at the rest stop and in Congress?
Okay, let's say
a lot of cross-cultural pollination going on there, Brother Warren. You might be missing out on
I thought I'd try to get one like that, didn't I?
They
got news to you, pal. There's a lot of that going on. It ain't exclusive to white boys anymore.
Of course, there's some black people emulate what white people do, of course. But for the most part, those practices were something that were practiced among straight white males, all of those things.
Look, nobody's denying.
Okay.
You're focusing on the white race doing it. I don't think anybody's denying
because
that.
Because it's public.
White race,
it's
the
public.
Chinese or blacks. Nobody's
it's
denying
by it. White scholars.
Right. Okay.
Here's
denying
the problem.
It. The
You've
thing
got, is. Here's the problem.
The thing
You've got
is,
scholars right now are saying that men can compete in women's sports because they say they're a woman. No, this is all wrong, and we need to get back to the way things really should be. If you're a man, you're a man. If you're a woman, you're a woman. And you don't. And when it comes to this whole thing about white men and all this stuff you've been talking about, I'm white. I would never do something like that. I don't care what the hell's going on. I would not.
And again, for most of white civilization and almost every culture, I mean, you can make me point to a couple where it wasn't quite so proscribed. Sodomy has been illegal, and for many cases, sodomy was literally a death offense.
No,
a death offense.
Ancient Greece? No, because ancient Greece.
You notice the term I use. I said with some limited exceptions, like in Greece and
Rome. Greece and Rome.
Limited exceptions like Greece and Rome. In most places, it was a death offense to be
a woman.
And ancient, and remember, those are the classical civilizations of Europe, Greece and Rome. That's what European civilization is based off, emulating Greece and Rome. And in Greece, a woman was only perceived as something to carry a child.
But love was between an older man and a young boy. Oh, that's
you're definitely over-exaggerating that one. That, you've taken a bit of truth there, and you run
no,
up the flag.
No, that's very well documented.
You're
wildly over-exaggerating.
Very well.
That's very well documented.
The behavior is documented, but the extent of it is over-exaggerated.
No, it's not over-exaggerated. You out of line with that.
You
out of line. You out of line with that. You out of line. Classical European culture, which was Greece and Rome, practiced same-sex behavior that was normal, emulated, and admired. The philosophers sought young boys to pass on their knowledge to.
Many of these philosophers you speak of were sophists. They were not considered classical Greek philosophers.
You can come to the defense all you want, Sarge. It is what it is. It is very well
just make another argument. Don't worry about whether I'm coming to the defense or not. Just make your own argument, will you?
Do the best you can
with what you got. Don't just try to do this one. Come on. You've been sticking to the issues fairly well. You need to keep it up. Don't give up.
Another book, guys.
Don't give up.
Don't worry
about the fact that you can't compete. Just do the best you can.
Here go another book, guys. It's called
Man,
Kill Streak.
Man, this guy, and he has to do that. Now, see how he's gotten off the subject because he's moving.
Here go another book. It's called Still Street, Sexual Flexibility Among White Men in Rural America.
You can find a book that'll say anything that you want
sure
to.
Sure can. Jesus. Man. Ow.
You can find a book that'll say anything you want it to. You can find a so-called expert that'll say anything you want them to. It doesn't say anything about the truth anymore. It just isn't there.
And it has been, Warren, what's the point you're trying to make, that the majority of white people are homos or what?
No. Here's the point.
Okay.
Is that in the discussion that we have in America where there is an anti-gay belief, okay, we have to come to terms with these other truths about what we call gay behavior in American culture. See, a lot of so-called Christians, evangelicals, conservative Republicans stand in these pulpits and in these audiences with all of this mess, and the whole while they themselves are gay, are practicing homosexual behavior. It is so well documented, particularly in the evangelical and conservative circle. So we then have to go to and pinpoint practices that have always been there in our face that we don't want to see.
Okay, so your point is that the conservatives who are anti-gay and do not recognize that there's this hypocrisy. They themselves are hypocrites, and that a lot of conservatives are hypocrites,
very much,
right?
Very much so hypocrites.
I would agree with you. So that's your point.
Let me say this. That doesn't mean the concern about the trans and the sport, that doesn't mean those are not legitimate concerns. They are legitimate concerns. I do believe there is a sinister agenda to confuse the masses of people with their gender. I do believe that. But what we have to understand that pressure is coming from a power elite that doesn't have loyalty to conservative or liberal.
Okay. All right. Look, part of the stuff about ancient Greece and the extent of homosexuality in ancient Greece was talked about by this thing about Spartan males. Sparta was a military, and they said Sparta had this homoerotic connection to the military culture, believing that men connect to each other sexually were more likely to die for each other in battle. Now, that is wildly over-exaggerated, and to some extent, this the belief about homosexuality in ancient Greece has been extrapolated into one big overhyped lie. It was not to the extent of which they speak of. Just like with Alexander the Great. Alexander the Great probably slept with more women than Hugh Hefner. But some screenwriter said he was homosexual or bisexual, and people just ran with it. There were laws in Athenian democracy against homosexuality to include the death penalty. again, I'm not saying it didn't happen. It did. It was a part of the culture, just like it is today here in the United States. But it is wildly over-exaggerated as to the extent of it. I mean, this guy wrote a book called Great Greek Homosexuality, a guy named Kenneth Dover. And he said that homosexuality is discussed a great deal, mainly from a sociological, anthropological point of view. But again, the same people don't talk about the Athenian laws against homosexuality that included the death penalty. So please, let's not overhype it.
Sarge,
I'm not saying
Sarge,
you can't
find me a
talk
book,
about
Sarge,
it.
Sarge, find me a book that says that homosexuality in Greece and Rome is over-exaggerated. Now, you find me that book.
Okay. Why don't you quantify the extent to which you think, give me a rough estimate, then to be precise, how widespread, what except by percentage, among men of sexual age in ancient Greece was homosexuality practiced? Give me an idea of how widespread you think it was.
Look. Is very well documented.
You don't have to be exact. Just give me a word.
Everyone can go read it.
Common,
the foundation,
I'm trying to have a common ground
of
understanding with you, and I can't have it unless I can precisely picture what you're speaking of.
The foundations of European Western civilization
were
based on Greece and Rome. The foundations of Western civilization, which was Greece and Rome, was practiced homosexual behavior with
a simple question. How widespread was it? I have to get an idea of how you said the very foundation of Western civilization is homosexual. Now, I know that's nonsense. So would you please be a little bit more precise?
You know what? You guys are almost making me want to do a show on Wednesday.
You should.
I mean, I'm just amazed that he would say this. I mean, come on.
I found my topic in my face.
This is an article called Lovers and Soldiers. And a part of the article says an elite core of male lovers was unique in Greek history, but homosexual relationships were commonplace.
Okay, and I can find you another study that says they weren't.
Okay, so
we can go back
don't
and
argue with me.
I want to get an idea of what it is you think the extent of it was. You, not your studies. How much do you think, how widespread do you think, in any manner you choose to quantify it to me,
according
so I can get an idea of what you're speaking
according
of?
According to the scholars who read ancient Greek, Latin, according to them, homosexual relationships were common.
Was every man
that's
a homosexual?
That. That's not
was
me
every man
that.
A homosexual? Was everyone
look,
either bisexual
look,
or homosexual? Was everyone?
It was
commonplace.
Everyone? It the foundation
okay,
of Western
does that
the
mean over 50%?
The foundation of Western civilization, Greece and Rome, homosexuality was commonplace.
Right. Now I know you're off the rails
say
now.
That a bit of sophistry is being at use here.
Now I know it is.
Okay, let's say that it is common. You have to have a definite meaning, or as close as possible to the meaning to the word common. For example, in the United States, we have 320 million people. It may be common for 10%. That's 32 million. That's a lot. That's common to have, let's say, homosexual behavior. Is that common enough for people to say that it's the overarching, significant, statistically significant problem in the United States? That is the point about Greece and about Rome and about every other Western culture. It may have been common, but common enough for it to have been a pandemic or an epidemic? That is the question.
Okay, here's what I'm seeing here, and I'm finally getting some words in here. But what is going on
you?
Here is he keeps saying that it's well documented. Well, the problem with that is that with what's going on today with this gay culture and everything else, they've got it well documented too. So are we supposed to believe all of this? I don't think so. It's not, it may be common among them, but it's not common among most of the people.
Now, let me tell you something about documentation. It's, other researchers have shown, and whether or not their research has been proven to be valid, but they claim that a lot of the research, medical research and other types of research, are for at least 40% have not been compiled properly. Statistically, scientific, use of scientific method, the analysis that was involved, the conclusions, false. So a lot of the research that we rely upon has been, according to these researchers, false, okay? False foundations, mm-hmm. false conclusions. And it may be, because, you know, people being who they are, they like to take shortcuts. I happen to like the scientific method. I like statistics as an amateur, amateur statistician, if you will. So I'd like to know exactly what kind of trials, methodologies, hypotheses, and rituals that they had to go through in order for them to come to their conclusions. Without that, without the actual specifics of their and truthful, okay, they have to be truthful, without the specifics and their being truthful of the methods that they've used and people knowing what they are, because a lot of people do not like, it's like legalese, people don't like a lot of mathematics. A lot of people in the mainstream will not understand what's going on. I happen to like clinical trials if they're done properly. I like scientific evidence. And without it, everything is speculation, even
yeah.
in the so-called research.
But again, if you look at the Hellenic literature, whether you're looking at Ulysses or any of the works of Herodotus or Xenophon, you look at any of them, I want you to point out to me in any of the Hellenic literature of the ancient era, anywhere where there is a single description of a homosexual act. Now, there's all kinds of descriptions of heterosexual acts, like with Zeus being the most prominent heterosexual alpha male. We learned that from Xenophon, the historian, that Socrates wasn't a teacher who took advantage of his students. Instead, he said, according to his teachings, wrote it down, any kind of sexual activity or other physical contact in which your student was simply unacceptable. Socrates, the most famous of his students, a guy named Plato, you might have heard about him, is another Greek whose writings have been taken completely out of context. Plato said that the only type of real love is the love between two men. That's what he wrote the dialogues and the Symposium and the Phaedrus. But the kind of love he was talking about didn't mean sticking your whatchaloos into somebody's body. I mean, that's not the kind of love he's talking about, a platonic love. That's where we get the term platonic love from.
Yep.
Give me a break.
I totally agree with you there. But the only thing, what's going on in the world today is that there's no such thing as platonic love. If you love somebody, you got to have sex with them. That's not true.
Yes. I mean, I'm trying to find where all this rampant homosexuals in any of the literature from the era. The Greeks were very literate. They wrote a lot of things they call classics. I have yet to see, and I admit I'm not a Greek scholar, but I have read Ulysses. And I'm trying to find out where there's any representation of overt homosexuality whatsoever. The very best you can get is a kind of implied homosexuality. And anyone is hung up about it as many other societies that came along later. It's not there.
Yep. No, it's not. And the thing that you had mentioned, you know, up until just not too long ago, maybe 100 years or so, that was a death sentence.
Doggone right. Especially when it was repeated. They might let you go the first, one, second, third. The third time, you get your head cut off in many societies in Europe.
Yep. And the only reason why it's ending up in the military now is because it's being allowed.
Exactly. They have literally taken the sodomy punishments out of the Uniform Code of Military Justice. I remember because I enforced it as a National Guard military policeman when I was a military policeman. We got called up on summer camp.
Yep.
The violation of Article 134.
Yep. And
But I got to hear all this. Okay, look, again, I am looking. Look, again, we are acknowledging homosexuality is a constant amongst all peoples in every corner of the globe. That is one of that is a characteristic of human beings. That is one of the things they do. It is a deviant activity. It is certainly not the norm because it's always a small percentage of people, admittedly, varying depending upon which culture you're looking at. But it's always a small percentage of whatever population you're talking about, a small percentage. But now these people now with this agenda are trying to blow it up into an order of magnitude of primacy of sexual behavior among all human beings and all cultures at all times throughout all of history. And it's just not true.
Nope, it isn't. But, I'm at a loss here.
While you're trying to think, get the words together to say exactly what you want to say, what I like is just good old-fashioned research done well to support any argument, and I don't care what the argument is,
mm-hmm.
you know? Just as long as the research is done properly, the analysis is done properly, the conclusions that are arrived at are done properly. I don't care what the research points out, as long as the research is truthful.
I agree absolutely. I think the historical record is there to inform us, enlighten us, and to draw conclusions about human behavior and activities through time. And I don't want to distort it for either my purposes or anyone else's. I want it to reflect the truth as best can be known from it. There are many people today who want to use history for agendas. And in pursuit of that, they are willing to distort it. In fact, their agenda demands that they distort it in order to achieve the agenda. There's always something new to learn, certainly. I mean, new things come out all the time. You know me, Joe, you know what a big story I am about World War II? When the news came out about the Ultra Intercepts, it changed everybody's view about World War II. Everything was changed, and we didn't know about that until 1976. They had kept it secret all that time. And it changed every view everybody had of the way the World War II unfolded because there was new information that affected everything else. Look, if I get new information and it's credible, then I'm perfectly prepared to change my mind. But what they do is what frequently happens is you are told, oh, you have to believe this because it's been suppressed or hidden for all these generations by people who just don't want you to know the truth. Whenever I hear that, I get suspect. I start suspecting I'm hearing an agenda and not an attempt to reveal the true historical record.
And you know that it's not just about history as well. You know, it's about anything. People will get into bar fights over baseball scores because of confirmation bias. People have to defend their prior beliefs. Why do they have to defend it so vigorously? Well, a lot of times it's because they just don't want to be seen as dumb. But you're not dumb if you don't know everything. You just say, well, I didn't know that. Simple.
Okay.
Truly.
With what was going on then with New Orleans wake up in there, I could hardly understand anything that was going on because he kept saying everything. He would not answer questions. He kept saying that it was well documented. Well, you can well document anything. It doesn't mean it's true. And because he wouldn't listen and he wouldn't answer the questions, I muted him. And he's pissed off about that. He says, you guys are cowards and deceptive. Sarge thinks he knows everything about everything. But when
I just said I didn't. I'm not a Greek scholar. I'm familiar with Greek culture.
Exactly.
I'm familiar enough to know when I hear bullshit. I'm not a Greek scholar. I just said I wasn't.
Yep.
But I am familiar with Socrates. I am familiar with Aristotle. I have familiarity because I have enough wherewithal to educate myself about them. Doesn't mean I'm a scholar. Advance your argument. But what he does, he's afraid to advance his arguments because he knows they cannot be sustained. He just tosses out a factoid and then expects it to stand unexamined. And that's not the way it works when anybody knows what an argument is.
Yep. And that's where our world is going to hell in a handbasket right now, because very few people have the guts to stand up and say, hey, that's not true. Or that may be documented, but that doesn't mean it's the truth. You know, it seems like everybody in the world right now has their own opinion. Their own opinion is right, and everybody has their own definition of what's right. Well, there's only one definition of right.
Yeah, what's that, Bob?
And I'm trying to understand how you found a civilization on homosexuality. How did that work exactly? I'm serious now. Let's say for a minute that, you know, okay, I accepted the notion that you have founded the basis of your civilization on homosexuality. Let's accept that. Now, how does that work in practice?
I'll tell you.
Explain to me how that works?
The minority of the civilization were heteros. Therefore, they procreated, and their children spread like wildfire, even though the basis of the civilization was overwhelmingly homosexual. That's how it happened.
Okay, well, there you go. At least that's an explanation. explanation, okay? I just got through hearing that Western civilization is essentially founded on homosexuality. I mean, and the only reason that Greeks were interested in women was to procreate and have children, which would tend to indicate, perhaps, that it wasn't homosexuality that was the basis for Greek civilization. But I digress. I would simply like to understand how such a civilization could actually prosper. Because it would seem to me, given what I know of male sexuality and myself and many of the other men, I know how aggressive we can be sexually. So therefore, it would seem to me as if male sexuality unrestrained, given how aggressive it is, and we know how it is in homosexuals, like it is in heterosexuals, it actually has a tendency to be destructive. The female imperative tends to tamp it down, at least for most of human existence, because women have more at stake in the reproductive act. And in order to ensure the survival of their progeny into the future, so they can pass their genes on like men want to pass their genes on, they have to be picky because they're born with only so many gametes. That's all they get. I mean, all the gametes a woman's going to have in her life, she's born with. So she's got to be picky about her choice of a mate to ensure he's going to be there, not only be a good, suitable genetic partner, but also be there to help her rear her children. So the female imperative, reproductive imperative, tends to dampen the aggressive male sexual imperative. They go hand in hand in that way. They complement each other. And so I'm trying to understand how it is that a society that is primarily focused around the rampant male heterosexual aggressive imperative could possibly succeed. It doesn't make sense to me. Does it make sense to any of you?
Now, you see, Bob, you see what this gentleman is doing? He is an advocate for toxic masculinity.
No, I recognize it when it is toxic, and it is toxic if it's not restrained by women's reticence. Male sexuality can be toxic when it's not restrained by the need to, because women essentially do the choosing in a sexual relationship, even in patriarchy. Women tend to do the choosing.
Yeah, and they like aggressive men. Now, as you were saying, to their choosing, it's amazing how women will like a guy because he's aggressive, and then because she doesn't like the guy anymore, now he's still aggressive, now he's toxic.
Okay. It's really odd, isn't it? Well, it's
sure.
What we say about women. Men have an off and on switch. We're kind of simple. Women, if you look at the instrument panel that controls a woman, you're going to see rheostats and gauges and capacitors and transistors and flux gate switches and all kinds of things because they're so damn complex compared to men. Off, on. That's us. I mean, basically, women, the variety of variegated impulses and behaviors are almost infinite, especially with regard to what they want.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I have to agree with you there.
Yep. Yep, yep. And, of course, we may let them get away with it because we were trained to be gentlemen and to believe that women were born with this virtuous element within their DNA. They would not lie unless maybe they were traumatized in some way. They were hurt by some bastard man. And as a result, this now virtuous princess is now turned into a human being with aspirations of petty revenge. Now, let me tell you something. A woman is not born virtuous. She's just a human animal,
right.
A mammal. That's it.
Right. Yeah,
there
she has a different, slightly different reproductive strategy. Well, significantly different reproductive strategy than men. Men are profligate because we are literally sperm manufacturing machines. Throughout our lifetime, if we're healthy, we manufacture sperm. Women, they're not like that. They got an infinite number of eggs and a relatively limited reproductive life. So it behooves them as a reproductive strategy evolutionarily to be more picky. It's not that they don't want it. They want it as much or worse than men do. But they also are constrained by this either implicit or explicit knowledge of the reproductive realities of being a woman. Every living being, basically, if they're normal, want to get their genes in succeeding generations. That's what life is literally about. And that goes for women and men. Men are profligate by their very nature. We're profligate. Women, on the other hand, have a bit more at stake because of the limited nature of their reproductive lives. It's a reality that is part of human nature, and we ignore it. That's when you get into trouble. That's why I have all this trouble between men and women now, because we ignore this basic reality of human nature.
That is true.
But we're so smart because we're 21st century folks, and we know more than all them people who've had it basically figured out a couple of millennia ago, few millennia ago. We learned so much more now. We got all these scientific tools. We can measure things. We can quantify things. We can objectify them. We can look at them. We can look at them under a model, microscope, magnify things a million times. We can see things they never could have dreamed of. We know about the germ theory of disease. Why those ancients know nothing? They were ignorant peasants, stupid, superstitious. And we believe, though, that men can be, in modern times, we're not that way. We believe that men can have menstrual periods and get pregnant. That's how smart we are. That's how much smarter we are than they were. Tells you all you need to know, doesn't it?
Yep, that's exactly it. And I've still got one of the things that's going on right now is that we're all being called cowards because we won't let New Orleans wake up talk. If he keeps saying that he is telling the truth and all this stuff, but he wasn't. He was just telling us that it was well documented, and anything can be well documented. Doesn't make it the truth.
Yeah, the Third Reich did a lot of the documenting, didn't they? You go back and see what kind of records they got. They documented everything. That didn't mean they were true.
Well, you're right, except that the statement well documented implies to me that if you have a well documented book, article, et cetera, white paper, it means that the sources that you're citing, first off, you should have sources. A lot of times people don't have sources. But if you do have sources, then those sources should have been researched and the scientific method applied properly. But you're right. Usually the general layman's term of well-documented means, look, he has sources. Does it mean that those sources are valid? Not necessarily, right? So, yeah. But then again, as I said before, a lot of research done nowadays is just false. So,
but, Joe, that's the purpose of the scientific method in epistemology. That's the reason we developed these disciplines. The purpose
of
epistemology is to put everything to a test. And one of the common ways of doing it is through debate and discussion. That's how you determine what is objectively true and real. First of all, you observe it, then you analyze it, then you subject it to testing, and then you prove it by, you don't prove through empirical observation, but you subject it to the same results being obtained by somebody else applying your data to the question, the thing that's in question. And that way you prove something either scientifically or, in the case of often philosophy, epistemologically. And what we have today is a failure to make epistemological tests of almost any proposition. It's my way or the highway. And I never said that. I wanted to hear your argument. That's why it's so frustrating dealing with people on the left. They don't want to advance. They present a proposition and say, see, now it's settled. Shut up and let's move on because now I've proven that you, what you say can't be true. I said, wait a minute. No, you just said this. I know that this has been proven here. I think you have a problem with this. I say this. Now, what is your response? They don't want to respond. Rather than respond, what they do is they just launch a personal attack on you. This is the common method. Epistemology is a foreign idea to these folks. They don't want to test propositions. They really don't. While at the same time, they claim they do, and they claim you want to censor books.
Yep.
And they ban Tom Sawyer. Where are you going to get a, where are you going to get an original copy of Tom Sawyer in a public school today with the word nigger in it? Where? No, they vulgarized everything they don't like now.
They took it out.
These people are insufferable sometimes. Jeez.
Well, it's not only reserved just for liberals, Doug. I think maybe you might agree with me on this. I find that most people, whatever their belief system is, as I brought up the example of the bar fight over baseball scores, whatever a person's belief system is in whatever particular topic or issue, they are going to hang on to it like it's their life, when all they just have to do is say, I didn't know that. Oh, really? Well, what kind of proof do you have to back up what you say? Now that is going to start a fight. It doesn't matter what the argument is, you know?
Oh, God, I mean, you're right. You're right. I mean, look, I understand the desire to have your point of view prevail, because I certainly believe that way. I want my point of view to prevail. I mean, I believe what I believe is superior, particularly to people on progressive left and Marxist and all. I believe is superior. But I don't want people to accept it because I say it is. I'm prepared to test their propositions against what I believe through endless debate. I don't say I foreclose something just because I can present a fact that's compelling. Keep making arguments. Who knows? Maybe you'll change my mind about something you present to me a compelling and a convincing enough argument. It's happened before. I used to be a leftist. I was an aspiring Black Panther. I wanted to be in the Nation of Islam. I know how they think because I thought that way. But I was convinced, I've been convinced otherwise. And I think that's why they censor so much. They don't want, that's why until Elon Musk came along, the whole internet was just one big hive of disinformation experts and censors to one degree or other. Because they're afraid of being challenged.
Yep.
I can't disagree with you. Okay. I cannot disagree with you on that. But that's it. Again, and the major reason is because people will want to hang. People don't want to appear stupid or to appear to have been deceived. I say when people wake up from the matrix, when they find out just how powerful the brainwashing has been to the conditioning of America and the rest of the world, to how we've been dumbed down to reality, how we do not even want to believe that the congressmen or the politicians of the various countries have been there selected to sell them out. Okay? They don't want to believe it. But until the generic you, us, when we as a nation, as a global entity, once we realize that the power of brainwashing, we should not say, oh, God, how stupid have I been? No, it should be, why did you do this to me? And then we should just give them a taste of their own medicine.
Well, I'll tell you, when I became a police officer, I was of the utmost belief that every gun that was not in the hands, every firearm that was not in the hands of the police and or the armed forces ought to be rounded up and put in centralized armies if you're going to allow people to have any access to firearms that were not members of the police and or the armed forces. yet they would have to sign them out for them, whatever period of time they wanted to use them for, whether it was hunting or target shooting. And then at the end of the day, they had to turn them back in. If we weren't allowed them to have guns at all. I was one of the biggest gun grabbers you could ever imagine it could possibly be. And then when I became a police officer, I saw that every single thing they were telling me about gun control and crime was simply not true. It did not line up with almost anything they were saying. My empirical observations simply did not line up with anything. So therefore, it caused me to do research into the matter. The history, tradition of firearms in the United States, the levels of gun control, who was committing the crime, where the homicides were occurring, at what frequency, the recidivism rate, and all of that. And I did a 180-degree turn on the issue because of the information I got.
Yes. And I agree.
And the good part about it was that you did it on your own. You didn't have to have somebody shove it in your face. Therefore, you did not get. You might have gotten a little bit angry with yourself, but through the process of trying to find out through your own research what the truth was, you came across self-revelation, and you might have kicked yourself in the butt for a little while. But at the same time, you said, you know what? Okay, since this new information is here, and my prior beliefs are now proven wrong by my empirical observations, I will now go with what I have now learned now.
Yes, and you have to be careful about your empirical observations because, oh, they can lead you astray. Because after all, it's like that, what's that phrase, all quiet on the Western Front? Well, you know, I mean, you got to remember, all over the Western Front, everything's quiet. No fighting going on anywhere. This guy, he gets killed on the very day where it's one of the quietest days in the whole war. Now, for him, that was the worst fighting ever. Because he got killed in a relatively small skirmish. Everywhere else, it was quiet. So even your empirical observations can lead you astray. You know, so that's why you've got to match them against other things that either corroborate or discorroborate what you're experiencing and observing. You got to have the whole picture. You got to get the whole picture. Everything is context. Then you can have a more complete understanding.
Yeah. Absolutely, and you have to have critical thinking, you have to have logic, and, you know, then you have to, as you were saying, match up with you, again, the generic you, and the anecdotes that people hear and the anecdotal evidence that they experience, and using that, using the critical thinking and logic, try to differentiate between fact and fiction, but the confirmation bias that we all have. That is very demanding on us. That says, you are not going to be wrong, Buster. Otherwise, you're a dope. That's what that little voice on the air.
I don't know if you got Nolan's wake up muted or not, but y'all let him back on and let him, just suggest it anyway. Y'all let him back on and let's see what he's got to say about that. If he can refrain from, like, you know, telling you how crazy you are. I guess. You're on dope or something. And maybe you can actually say, well, you know, why he agrees or he doesn't agree with what we said.
I can actually tell you what he's been saying because he's saying it in the chat room. But what I did was I actually hung up on him because one of the things that he was doing was he wouldn't even listen to what we were saying. He would just say, well, what I'm saying is well documented. When I kept telling him, just because it's well documented does not mean that it's the truth, because documentation anymore doesn't tell the truth. It just says what one side wants it to say.
I mean, it's like an endless lecture rather than an interchange or exchange of ideas. So you just get hectored. You get lectured. Rather than say, okay, you said this. This is what you said. Can you justify what you said? Or ask me to justify what I say, what I say. I got no problem with it. Maybe I'll learn something from you, but that's not what he does.
No, but then he goes in and he says, this is reading from the chat room. He says, sir, you are part of the problem in this country. You are isolated, afraid of life, and hide behind God and the Bible.
See,
then he goes
stereotyping. That's not even your position necessarily.
Yeah.
I mean, if you people believe in separation of church and state, they act like that's an actual concept in the Constitution, and it isn't. The Constitution is quite clear about what it says in the First Amendment. It doesn't separate church and state. It simply prohibits an establishment of a religion by the federal government and it prohibits the free exercise of religion by the citizenry or people generally. That's all it does. It doesn't separate anything.
Mm-hmm.
You can be informed. I mean, you have a perfect right to be informed by your religious perspective on anything. So,
exactly.
I mean, if you're going to make an argument against that, don't make it on the basis of the Constitution, because that's not what the Constitution says. It's like with everything. It's a way to marginalize you because, you know, they'll take a lot of things because, yes, religious people have done abuses throughout history. We know this. We know about the Inquisition, and they over-exaggerated the Inquisition, too. Then we know about the Salem witch trial. We know about things like the Scopes monkey trial and all that. Okay, you can exaggerate a lot. They do exaggerate a lot of that stuff. But nonetheless, just because something is abused or something is stretched beyond the original meaning of it does not mean that it is an invalid concept. Religious freedom is one of the things this country was established because people are trying to get away from it. But no, they marginalize you because you have religious beliefs. And which the basis of American liberty is religious, specifically Presbyterian religious. Even King George III said so.
Mm-hmm.
But well, you know, we're going to disregard all that because we're governing a brave new era today. All that history, it doesn't matter. Who cares about that? Besides, the founders were racist and misogynist and killed Indians. Who cares about them?
Yeah. And one of the
This is argument. Critical theory run rampant and elevated to absolute dogmatic truth.
But the problem with that is critical theory is nothing more than just a theory. It has never been proven, but they want it to be the truth. And one of the last things that New Orleans Wake Up said, once again, I have kicked the conservative asses with knowledge and information, things they don't have. Trouble is, his information comes from pretty wacko areas. He says that it's all very well documented, that this is exactly what he was saying, was that we are all homosexuals and we have to do, you know, we have to do things like, no, we're not.
Look, you take a kernel of truth, that homosexuality had a basis in ancient Greece, which is true. But then he'll elevate it to the point of primacy. That's the problem with it. Not what he says, not that everything he says is literally untrue, because there's truth in it. Problem is the pride of place he awards to it. That's the problem. It's like in your body. When you start to think of yourself, and the amount of emphasis you, based on sensory feedback from the various parts of your body, the biggest part of your body is your head, if you think about it. You don't really think, unless you're using them, you're not thinking about your feet, your legs, your trunk, your arms, even though collectively they're far bigger parts, and even individually, they're far bigger parts of your body, because you experience everything through your eyes and your head and everything else. And for most of us, if we were to put together a sensory map of what we look like, it would be really, our bodies would be really distorted as to the emphasis we put on various aspects of our body. Because after all, you know, we perceive things through our eyes, and that's where we centralize everything. The head's the biggest part of the body, and it really isn't. To some extent, these critical theorists, they do the same thing. They take the focus of their rage or their outrage or their criticism, and they elevate it to everything. Everything. They exclude them almost everything else. That is also important about, say, the United States. Now, I think it's more than just a story of grievance and atrocity and crime. That's part of it, to be sure. It certainly deserves to be studied. Certainly deserves to be commemorated and remembered. But it's infinitely more than that. There's far more good in this country than there's been bad. But you never know it, listen to folks. Never. You never know it. Never.
You would never
they
know it.
They are utterly lacking in context because they wish to fundamentally transform the United States from what it is into something that it was never intended to be, nor should it ever be. And that's why.
Well, you know, I knew that was trouble coming when Obama said that in the first place. You know, he was dazed from fundamentally changing America. And my first thought was, why?
Because it ain't socialist enough. It's not a North American outpost of the great globalist empire. That's what they want to transform it into, ultimately.
Ultimately.
They want their world to be governed by oligarchs and serfs and various functionary apparatchik bureaucrats in the middle. That's it.
And whatever.
They own nothing and we'll be happy.
And whatever you do, just don't believe the backflap of Obama's book, I think, Sins of My Father. Oh, no, when he was, that might have been the title, when he was running for president, when the backflap said he was born in Kenya. Don't believe that. That's a mistake.
All I know is that his publisher said he was born in Kenya. They wrote a book about, they published it on a publicity pamphlet. They put it out in 2007, mm-hmm. and it remained unchallenged until he started to run for president in 2009. And I think, but in 2005, and it was not challenged for 6 years until he decided to run, but then they started issuing correctives. Now, I don't know if he was born in Kenya or not, but I know that is what happened. That is a matter of fact, what I just said. Well, now you can interpret it any way you wish, but the way I choose to interpret is that perhaps there is something suspicious about the manner and location of his birth. But that isn't the real issue anyway. The real issue is he's not a natural born citizen. He's not qualified under Article 2, Section 1, Clause 5 of the United States Constitution to be president of the United States any more than Kamala Harris is.
Okay. Well,
for that matter, neither was Chester Arthur. Chester Arthur wasn't qualified either. He's a white man, and he wasn't a natural born citizen either, but he got away with it too.
Well,
Where was he born, Sarge?
He was born in the United States, but his father was a Scottish citizen when he was born.
Oh, okay.
So he wasn't a natural-born citizen, just like Obama. At least if you believe the story.
Well, do you remember when this whole thing about Obama not being a natural-born citizen and all this stuff didn't really work for him? Do you remember what they went after that?
They call him a native. Some people call him a native-born citizen.
Well, it was about John McCain, as they were saying that if Obama wasn't eligible to be president, then John McCain wasn't either because he was born.
Well, he wasn't. John McCain wasn't born on American soil. He was born in the Panama Canal Zone in Cologne Hospital in Panama City. That's Panamanian soil.
Mm-hmm.
John McCain is a citizen by virtue of the Immigration and Naturalization Act. There's no doubt he's a citizen. He's not a natural born citizen qualified under Article 2, Section 1, Clause 5. Because the only application that provision of the Constitution has anything at all to do with is eligibility to be president. It has no other constitutional meaning.
What I read was when McCain was born on a naval base, and as a result,
naval bases are leased. They are Panamanian soil. When you are born,
If
you ask anybody who has a child born overseas that is serving in the armed forces of the United States, what they must do in order to prevent their child from being a citizen of that country that they're stationed in, is go to the American consulate and register the birth of their child so the American consulate can report it to the host government or that American military base. Because every status of forces agreement that the armed forces negotiates with the country has that provision. If you report it to them and you're a member of the armed forces serving the United States there, then they will not make your child a citizen of their country, whether it's Japan, whether it's Germany, whether it's any of the countries where we have bases, because those bases are foreign soil leased by the United States government.
Does that make you, if you do that, does that make the child a natural born citizen?
No, it makes them a citizen by statute, the Status of Forces Agreement. The Immigration and Naturalization Act, which says that any child of any American born anywhere in the world is a citizen of the United States. So they are citizens by statute.
Does that mean that they're unqualified if they wanted to run for president?
Yes, it does.
Okay, okay.
Yes, it does. I know it's hard for people to accept it, but both parents are natural born citizens, and they're serving their country, and here they are born in a foreign country, and all of a sudden they can't be president? Yeah, I'm afraid it does. If you accept the meaning that the people who were part of the revolutionary generation, when they defined what a natural born citizen was in the Venus Merchantman case in 1814 and also the Wong Kim Ark case in 1868, you take the collective, both of those rulers collectively, there's no other reasonable conclusion you can draw.
Okay. I wasn't disputing it. I was just learning something new.
I understand why people, but they were serving their country. I'm sorry, I didn't make the rules. You made me cool. And look, if I had my way about it, I would say that any child born to two natural-born citizen parents serving their country overseas should be considered a natural-born citizen qualified under Article 2, Section 1, Clause 5. It ain't up to me. I'm the one who has to set my mind.
That's what I thought it was, so I guess I learned something new, too.
Well, look, I got this book about the Korean War. It's really a good book. And there's this guy named John Michaels who was awarded the Distinguished Service Cross, and he was appointed a regimental commander just on the eve after the North Koreans invaded the Korean Peninsula. And his wife just had a baby. And he said he was given orders to report to Korea. And he wrote in this book, I barely had time to pack a toothbrush and a spare uniform and go with my wife to the American consulate to register the birth of my child so she wouldn't be a Japanese citizen because he was based in Japan on a military base. She was born on a military base in Japan, on a United States Army hospital, on a United States Army base in Japan. And the only way Japan would not have a claim on their daughter as a Japanese citizen was for him to go register that child with the American consulate so they could report the birth to the Japanese, because the Japanese would not consider her a Japanese citizen under the agreement we had with the nation of Japan. Because they'll all say,
Sarge,
if you're born in Japan, you're a Japanese citizen. That's what they all say.
I want to ask you a question about a hypothetical. If you're in Japan and if you've given birth to your child at the American embassy, what are you?
You are a natural-born citizen of the United States.
Okay.
If both of your parents are natural-born citizens. Because the United States embassy is United States soil.
That's what I was saying. Saying to myself. Yeah, I was thinking that. Okay.
And it's like, the cemeteries in France are U.S. soil. That all those men who died in the Normandy campaign, those cemeteries were given to the United States as United States soil. That's United States. If you ever drop a baby in an American cemetery, you have given birth to a child on United States soil in France. It's like an embassy.
Mm-hmm.
And that was kind of decent of the French to make American soil all those places where 11,000 men or 13,000 men are buried who died in the Normandy campaign. And they granted the United States that ground in perpetuity, apparently.
Talking about this, I just feel a war, of course, is a horrible thing. I don't even do research on war. I don't like war. I know barely anything about the historical implications of war. I just don't find it interesting. And I find it a chronicle of the lack of humankind to humankind.
Well, I hate to admit this, Joe, but literally, the boundaries of nations have been determined in almost every instance by war, without exception.
Well,
that I felt,
sure.
Yeah, there's no getting around it. It's one of the sad things in human history, and it's going to ever be thus.
And I believe in boundaries, and I believe that you should defend your country. I just don't like war when it's using that as a as an excuse to actually steal other people's resources and to expand.
Well, not only to steal, but when you lose, even if you started out stealing, look at Prussia. Prussia was the premier Germanic state out of all of them. The one most associated with being German was Prussia. Prussia is no longer part of Germany. It's part of Poland now. It's called Galicia. Frederick the Great was the emperor of Prussia. Prussia is no longer a Germanic state because they lost the war.
Hey,
the
Joe.
Boundaries of Germany got changed.
Hey, Joe. You there?
That's the way things are.
Hello. Oh, okay. I had myself on mute. Yeah.
I mean, look at the Austro-Hungarian Empire. What is that now?
No longer the Ottoman Empire.
Yugoslavia was a big part. Yugoslavia was a big part of it for a long time after World War One. Yugoslavia doesn't exist anymore.
Okay. Hey, Joe.
And it just goes on and on.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I got a message for you from Lorianne.
Lori? Okay.
Yeah. She says, tell Joe Montana that I still love him, even though he decided to break up with me.
Baby, I pick up the slack if you want me to. You know, I mean, if you're feeling bad, come on over to size. I make you feel better.
She's actually on the phone.
Oh, there's my reconciled wife.
Oh, God.
She didn't raise a hand
yet? She hasn't put up her hand yet, says she wants to be on there. On there she goes. She's in here.
I hate to see a good woman mourning and feeling bad. You know, sometimes you got to step in there and, you know, give a little succor, as it were.
Nothing toxic about that at all, Sarge. Well, if you feel like coming over to a new arena, you can visit me. Yeah, nothing.
Ain't
toxic
no toxicity in this one, no sir.
Hi, Lori. How you doing, babe?
Hey, I'm doing pretty good. I've just been listening for most of the show. I think I tuned in about, I don't know, maybe 45 minutes late or something. But I've been listening ever since with the drama between New Orleans, Warren, and Sarge and stuff. And I'm like, oh, here we go.
I finally had to shut that down because I wasn't understanding nothing. And I thought, well, I'll just shut New Orleans down and mute him.
You know what I like to do, though? You know what I like to do? Whenever he talks about, because he likes to talk about white people and Europeans have colonized countries and all that. And okay, they have, and no doubt about it that they have. I mean, it's what is it? But I'd like to point out to him all the white nations that used to be that don't exist anymore because they got colonized, beaten, and conquered too. This is the way things are. You know, you lose. I mean, we can talk about what the Chinese did and the Mongols did and the Chinese did. The Vietnamese hate the Chinese, man, but they fought more wars than the Chinese they ever fought with Europeans. But not hundreds of thousands of years. You know what I mean? People often conquer their neighbors.
And it's part of it. Yeah, of course. It's part of man's inhumanity to man. And I'm waiting for Lorianne to come in with, I just love the testosterone show. You know,
I'm trolling you just because there needs to be some estrogen here, man. Like,
that's right. There's got to be estrogen in here somewhere, right?
I'll try to balance things out here.
Well, I don't know. Sometimes it can get a little toxic in men. Not that it's toxic in and of itself, but too much of it in a man tends to be toxic.
Well, of course, the operative phrase, Sarge, is too much. You know, the fact that we're born male and we're born aggressive. These are the same qualities that women like. Until, as you were talking about, the gauges. You know, well, the gauge says today on Monday that it's up to 10, but now on Tuesday it's up to 50, and I don't like the 50 mark. Therefore, he is now toxic. I don't want to. You know.
Yeah.
Well, I'm actually
trying to
glad
goat
to have
me into
Lori
a
in here.
Into a war of the sexes, aren't you?
Well, of course, you know. I mean, you can always bring in, you know, your stories and the stories of your girlfriends, etc. Of course, there's a whole bunch of toxic masculinity assholes out here, but I say that they're the minority. I threw out a subjective figure of saying that 25% of men cannot handle relationship, no matter how sweet and good and kind the female is. But 75% of men would think that a woman who is good, kind, non-competitive, and pleasant, decent in bed, okay, very simple qualities, that man wants her for a long, long time, if not forever. But you put those same qualities in a man, and eventually he's a bore. So the requirements by men and women are different. We're more simple. We want something based upon a lot simpler basis. Just give us a woman that we doesn't argue, can be our support system, okay? Is not competitive.
Doesn't argue.
Doesn't argue, okay? Present
a
woman.
You're
going
to be asking
a
woman to give up the very nature of her being.
Oh, well, then, you know, if you put it like that, yeah.
We
okay.
love to argue.
Yeah. Oh, woof. You know, but there are very few women who know how to argue and fight fair, okay? Arguing can lead to resolution if you fight fair, if you don't hit below the belt. But if you're going to always, if the man and the woman are going to point fingers at each other with these bony fingers of recrimination, and I didn't do that, you did that, it's your fault. No, it's your fault. Ah, bah, 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 bah.
And why can't women forget nothing? They can't forget nothing, can they? I mean, that was up for 10 years ago.
Isn't
you completely
the
forgot
about
that? They have never mentioned it 10 years, and they'll bring it up as though it just happened yesterday.
Isn't there something in the Bible about that? I mean, God created us. It's been an innate ability of women since we were created. There's got to be something in there.
Oh, man, that is really the most maddening, one of the most maddening things about women.
Oh, yeah, those bony fingers of recrimination, you know. But that's to start drama. They know they're wrong, but they do it to start drama. Oh, God. You know.
I'll keep quiet on that.
And that's why I'm single.
Oh, your wife must be in the house, Bob. Is your wife listening?
Yeah, she's in the house.
Yeah? Yeah.
She's probably asleep.
What'd you
she
say,
might
Lori?
Because I don't hear anything out there.
Oh, I'm sorry, Lori. I didn't hear what you said.
Oh, I don't even remember now. I was just laughing for the most part.
Yeah, about the drama problem.
We were just talking about how women remember everything, and then I forgot what I just said. So there you go. We always remember everything.
Mainly speaking about the things that you can hold against us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, see, now, Joe, she can hold this against you because you broke up with her.
Again.
But we've reconciled. We have reconciled.
Yeah, we broke up peacefully.
And there were predictions. I'll bet you there was probably some informal bets taken about how she and I were going to conduct our show. Would we get along? Would there be fireworks? What would happen? But we proved them wrong, baby.
I think there were a number of people that were just waiting for us to have a big blow up on air.
Yeah, but wait a minute, Joe, you guys were in a honeymoon period. I mean, you didn't get out the honeymoon period.
No. Why? What are you
well,
talking about?
Well,
that's
because Joe, like a typical man, has a fear of commitment. So he, you know, he can't commit to anything for very long.
That might explain it.
I've accepted that about him, and it's okay.
I thought you were going to say you had me trained. Remember you said that?
Well, yeah, I did have you trained.
See, there she goes. But you notice I'm not taking a pot shot at her because I am the man, and I realize that what she says at this particular point in time, I can just let it pass.
Uh-huh. Only because you can't really argue.
Oh, here we go. See the drama? You hear it? You feel it?
You can't really deny your fear of commitment there, honey. You know.
Oh, fear of commitment? I have never. Have
it's
I ever had
evidence for
in
a
real
long time.
Life a fear of commitment in real life? No, I don't know. I've had a rational aversion to marriage, but not a fear of commitment. I've never seen a really good marriage. I've never witnessed it. The same thing. But when the statistics bear it out, 53% of the people who say to each other, "I love you, you are the most important thing to me," and then 53% of them get divorced. And then when they leave each other, and you would think that they have learned from their mistakes, but do they? When they get married again to different partners, 60% divorce rate for the two-time losers. Holy shit. Oh, man.
Yeah, and a lot of those second marriages are to people who are just like the first wife.
Probably. You know?
It's the definition of insanity over and over again. My own sister is the example of it. She's on number four, and that was like, it was almost on its way to demise when it, you know, when they were still in the honeymoon phase. Like, actually, they've been together longer than I thought. I was placing bets that they would have ended it a long time ago, but they pretty much are kind of separated, though. And so, you know, I think I'm single because I've learned from my sister, quite honestly, like, okay, so marriage tends to be a problem between.
Yeah. And there's nothing wrong with being single. Why can't
you
be happy
all
being
all the time?
Yeah. And when I say you again, I mean the generic. Why can't you, we, us, be in a healthy, long-lasting relationship without the burden of having to go to the state or to your religion for approval to get married? And then you have to go to them again if you want a divorce. What?
Yeah.
Exactly.
It's like my first marriage. I think we were together for like 7 years before we got married. We got married, and it was like a year and a half, and that was the end of it. She divorced me for it was I think she's had irreconcilable differences. My second marriage ended in death. My second wife died of a drug overdose. And my third marriage, the one I'm in now, started over 16 years ago.
Oh, nice. Nice.
So it's been a ride.
Yeah, it has. It has.
What are the statistics on third marriages, though? Don't the odds kind of go up
too.
On the third marriage?
They're bad.
I've heard that, too.
Learn. Unless you don't learn.
Don't learn.
Like my sister.
That's
number three was worse than number two. Number two was worse than number one. And it sounds like number four is still on that trend for my sister, which is why I don't want any part of it. It's like, nope, I don't want to go through
don't
any of that
me.
Crap. Not ever.
Don't blame me.
You know,
then
but
you
then we got
to
talk about the tax penalties for that choice. You know, we've talked about that a few times. You know, it's like we are, you know, when it comes to taxes, we are penalized if we are single and don't have children.
It seems that way, doesn't it? Yeah. Bobby,
it
I
is.
Want to ask you
it
a
is.
Rhetorical.
We don't get the credit. We don't get head of household. Uh-huh. We can't claim all those dependents. We don't get earned income credit, you know, all of that stuff. So it is literally like a tax penalty for choosing to be single and not having children.
Mm-hmm.
That's why married couples usually file a joint return because there's tax benefit to filing a joint return versus independently.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was actually wrong on that one. We got married on my third marriage. We got married July 7th of 2007. So this next month, it's going to be our 16th year.
Yeah.
So,
I have a rhetorical question
close
for
enough.
You, unless you really want to answer it.
Okay.
The first marriage, you knew the woman for about 7 years, and about a year and a half later, once she said, "I do," she said, "bye-bye." Now, did you know, did you notice any difference in her mentality right after the honeymoon?
No, not really. As a matter of fact, she's really still in my life because when I moved back here to Albuquerque, she's the only one here in Albuquerque that I knew back then that's still here. And we talked.
Well, the reason I brought it up, the reason I brought it up is because there are a lot of women who look forward to the wedding more than the marriage. And then when they say I do, then it's my house, my kitchen. So it's there's a different mentality that comes with being a wife as opposed to being the fiance, as opposed to being the girlfriend.
Well, I'm not really sure. I think what destroyed that first marriage was financial stuff. I went into debt because I did all kinds of things with credit cards before we got married to try and, I guess, win her. And then I played hell trying to pay those off. And she didn't like the idea that most of the money I was bringing in was going to pay those bills. And that's essentially what ended that one. But then my second one, I don't think there was too much blame on that one, except when it comes to me or whatever, because she was heavy into drugs. She was taking Percocets and oxycodone or all these things because of pain that she had. And she just one day just took something she shouldn't have, and that was the end of it. So, but the one that I've got now, she doesn't take drugs. She doesn't smoke. She doesn't drink. So it's like actually like a breath of fresh air, even after 16 years.
So what do you get? Yeah, but so when are you going to let her out of the basement untied? Because if she's not doing any of that, you have to have it tied up.
I know. That you'd think so, huh?
Yeah, right?
But I guess one of these days I might even just have her on the show. I don't know.
Yeah. It's just a sad thing.
Yeah, don't need to make the poor guy talk about his private adventures in the bedroom with his wife, you know, with being tied up. So,
Well, there ain't much of that going on right now because we got a cat and he likes to sleep between us. So, So that's.
But my thing is, as I've said before about relationships, I don't like the state stepping in. I don't like the religious denominations taking control. We should together control our own fate and decide what we're going to do with each other, our properties, our assets, and I also decide in advance what we're going to do in case we separate and make it a legal contract. I happen to believe also that I don't like this public policy of a woman's the only one who's in control of a so-called body. Yes, be in control of the body, but not in charge of the fetus or the child. Don't say to me, a baby, you know, I agree with you. I'm for abortion. And then, oh, my God, I'm pregnant, and I've fallen in love with our baby. And I can't kill our child, but you have to give me 40% of whatever you earn for the rest of your life for this baby. And I know I agreed like an adult, but I'm in love with our child, you know. Contracts are contracts are contracts. And it's not part of public policy to have a contract like that, but I think it should be.
I would agree with you on that. Abortion is always such a hot topic and touchy and everything, especially as a woman. I can understand a woman starting out, you know, being, I don't want children or whatever. And then, but I got to admit, man, when I hit my mid-30s, holy shit, like my body was all about wanting to have a baby. I could not, I would see a baby on a commercial and I could literally feel my uterus like churn inside me. And I'm like, shut up, you know. you can't imagine the power of hormones when it comes to that. And then actually being pregnant and having a baby inside of you and stuff, you know. That's a whole different element, you know, there too. So, you know, I can't really blame a woman for changing her mind, but yet I also I'm probably one of the few women out there, maybe, that actually agree with men when it comes to that financial obligation. And, you know, I think that too many women use pregnancy as a way to rope in a man. Oftentimes will, you know, they can be so manipulative sometimes. And, you know, I just don't think that a man should be obligated for 18 years to finance a child that he did not want. I think it's kind of backwards how we don't allow men to have a say in these things, because it's their lives and their future and their finances and everything that are involved too. You know, and if a man actually decides to say, hey, no, you know, I don't want to do this, then he's called a deadbeat and all this other stuff. You know, I just think that the cards are stacked against men in that regard, and I don't think that that's fair. And I don't think it's right when women, like I said, you know, use a pregnancy or deliberately get pregnant in order to rope a man in or to try to save the relationship if it's on the rocks, you know, and then deliberately get pregnant as a way to try to salvage it. Women do that, you know what I mean? And me personally, I don't want any part of it. And I don't really blame men that get, you know, that are saying what Joe's saying.
Well, you know, it actually goes the other way, too. Never happened to me, but my wife that I've got now in her last marriage, when she hit, I think, 39, she found out that she had an extra burst of eggs, whatever, and that's about when she had her last child. But her husband, one of the things he did, he knew that she was getting ready to divorce him because of things that he was doing. And one of the things he said when she got pregnant was, ha ha, now you can't divorce me, I got you pregnant. So it does happen the other way around too.
How?
Oh yeah, absolutely it does. Absolutely it does.
How does that prevent
ways.
A woman?
I was actually dating a guy once that I pretty much know that he was trying to get me pregnant. You can only have so many condom mishaps, you know, before you start to suspect that, you know, something's not right here. And then at one point I was a few days late, which I'm usually very, you know, was very regular, you know, and so when I was a few days late, I was like, I'm going to have to, you know, go and buy a pregnancy test, because I was starting to get worried. And he was, like, all delighted. He was all, like, rubbing my tummy, like, oh, you might be pregnant. I might be a daddy and stuff. And I'm like, and he and I had only been dating for, like, 4 months. And he was all excited about it. And I was like, what the hell is wrong with you? You know? it's a pretty new relationship to be this excited over it, you know, and like, that's, this whole behavior about it, like I said, like, you know, several condom mishaps and then just him being so excited at the thought that I might be pregnant. And thankfully I wasn't, I was just late. I broke up with him after that. I'm like, you're just freaking me out, man. You are fucking freaking me out.
Yeah. I've had two women not threaten me, but, I'm trying to see what kind of reaction, what kind of rise they can get out of me by telling me that they were pregnant. They weren't, but they just wanted to see. And that's not fair either. That kind of scare tactic, just to create drama. On the other hand, too, I always say that a woman should be held accountable for her actions. I also believe, you know, we're talking about deadbeat dads. If a man knows that he is not wearing a condom, especially if he knows that she's fertile and he knows he can get her pregnant, then you better stand by the child because you know what the consequences are, what the law will impose upon you. So do not get her pregnant. What I don't like is the example. This is a real life example of two doctors, two MDs, went to bed they did not have regular sex. In other words, he didn't fuck her. She went down on him. She took the jism, right, went to the bathroom, kept it, and then she brought it home, impregnated herself, okay, without his knowledge. Then she goes to court wants him to pay child support. And do you know the judge supported her? The judge said it was a gift. Not that it was stolen, but that it was a gift. How can you do this? This is crazy.
That is messed up. That is so messed up.
Oh, yeah.
Unbelievable.
Oh, man. Well,
see, that kind of stuff is exactly what makes
me
mad about other women. It's like, I would love to stand by other women, you know, and always believe her, you know, like the whole Me Too thing. And it's like, no, there's way too many women out there that are completely full of shit, you know. No, I cannot stand by you.
Yeah.
You're just lying. You're manipulative, you know, all of that. Yeah. And just,
yeah.
Wow.
And then
yeah.
it's women like
you know,
that ruin perfectly good men, you know.
Yeah. And even though I sound a lot like I am down on females, I'm down on the bad females, the selfish females, the drama queens. But I also realize that there's, like I said before, there's 25%. There are scumbags out there. I'm talking about the male scumbags who will try to fight. Just came to mind. When I was in college, there was, at the end of the semester, there was a classmate of mine who got enamored with this girl. So they started dating. And about 6 weeks after they were dating, they got engaged. She was so happy. She said she was walking on cloud nine. You could see it in her face. When she talked to you, she always had smiles. So then the end of the semester, next semester, in the beginning, I see the guy, and I say, hey, how are you? And I forget his name. I forget her name. And he says, oh, we broke up. I said, you broke up? Wait a minute. How did you break up? You were engaged. You know, you broke up. He says, yeah, well, I got what I wanted. And then I realized he looked at me and he smiled like, yeah, I got what I wanted. I moved on. And I'm going, so wait a minute. In my head, I'm going, you lied to her to become your fiance just to get laid. And then after you got laid, you broke her heart by making her believe that she found the love of her life, that she was going to spend the rest of her life together with you. And then you just abandoned her. And I'm thinking to myself, scumbag.
Yeah,
that's, you know,
exactly.
Man. And that ruins good women. You think that's not a traumatic
Absolutely.
Event?
Absolutely. Scumbag is putting it mildly, you know. Yeah, I mean, that's horrible.
Oh, man.
That's horrible to do with somebody.
If you listen to the media, there is no good marriages out here anymore. And I know darn good and well there are. But you just never hear
about the stats. Well, according to the stats, you do have 53% divorce rate of first-timers and over 60%, I believe, for the second-timers. So if what you're talking about is during...
Okay, well, that was cool. That's my printer.
It's got to be your microwave.
That sucker off.
I was going to say, who's backing up a truck?
That was
my printer. It's got a thing on it where when you open up the front door on it to change the cartridges, when you shut the door, it has a tendency to go and say, okay, the door's open, even though it's not.
Okay.
And then every once in a while, it'll say, okay, the door's open, beep, beep, beep. And I say, oh, shut up. So I shut it off.
Especially if you're asleep. If you're sleeping, you have to come back downstairs to close the door that's already closed.
and I'll be totally asleep, and all of a sudden I'll get smacked across the back of the head. Rob, go and fix your damn printer.
So what was I forgot what I was saying now.
Oh.
Oh well.
Well, I'm coming up on the end of the second hour, or the third hour now, coming up on the third hour, or the ending of it. So I was going to go ahead and shut the show down, but this has been actually a rather informative and interesting show. And
well, when you get Sarge and Brother Warren together, you get the fireworks.
Yeah, well, I finally had to shut that down because I wasn't hearing anything except for arguing. So I thought, okay, time to shut it down. And then I got it all in the chat room as to what I was doing to him and all of this stuff. And I thought, oh, my gosh.
Well, I shut him down on my show, but I didn't mute him. I just let him know that, you know, there weren't going to be any more accusations or trying to start drama on the show as soon as somebody gets on the show. So that took care of that, you know. But if you're going to shut the show down. Uh-huh.
That's what Vince does on Saturday. He has what he calls the fruit bat alarm.
I like that. I've been to his show. Yeah, I like that.
And he did that to New Orleans Wake Up one night, and it was actually, and I was there when it happened. I just thought, well, this guy just doesn't listen. He just wants to push his ideals, and he says he's got all this proof and everything, but he doesn't. And when you ask him for the proof, he says, well, it's just documented, and he won't tell you. So and Vince finally got tired of it and shut him down. And that's what I did tonight. I got tired of it and shut him down.
Yeah. I remember when I used to go on progressive shows, and well, thanks, Joe, for calling, and then it was just a hang-up, you know.
I used to listen to Rush, and it seemed like he had no problems hanging up on people when he needed to, but, you know, me, I have a problem with hanging up on somebody, and it's that. I'm not really sure what it is. It's just that I feel it's
rude.
Well,
that's actually a good habit, you know, not to hang up. Just allow them to allow them to hang themselves with their own rope, or put them on mute and then bring them back after a few minutes to let them know that you know, that drama isn't allowed, you know, on this show.
Well, that's what I was gonna do, and then he just started saying all this stuff in the chat room, and I thought, nah, heck with him. I just hung up on him. So, you know, if he had just kept quiet in the chat room and not continually tried to push his ideas and telling me that he had kicked our asses with proof with facts again. Well, he never told any facts. He just.
I know. The thing about and the white males have sex with each other and say they're not gay. Well, they say they're not gay. But if you're engaging in an act in which only homosexuals engage in, you at least at that very moment are engaging in a homosexual act. You may never, ever be attracted to another man for the rest of your life, but for that particular moment, you have been gay, in my opinion.
Yep. And the last thing he posted into the chat room, as there were one of the last things he posted in the chat room, was the link to that show again. So I thought, okay, this is it.
Well, I hope he shows up on Wednesday.
Yeah, posting the link to it once wasn't enough. He had to post it a second time. And then when he starts getting into, you conservatives, you all are a bunch, you all are a cult, and da-da-da-da-da. This is why I have so many listeners. And it's like, well, maybe you're the cult. If you're attracting so many listeners, you know.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the problem with a lot of these listeners is they want to hear the stuff that everybody's been pushing, you know, that has no shred of truth to it, but they want to hear it. So that's why he's getting listeners. And I felt like telling him, well, I'm getting listeners too. You know, because I can remember when I first started this show back in 2007, I think there was about 5 years in there where I did the show and there was absolutely nobody here. I would get people who would listen to it after the fact, but I would never get anybody who would call in. And then when I joined Conservative Nation Media, the only people that would call in would be the host of the other shows to advertise their shows and talk for a little bit about it. But, you know, I never got anybody who would call in and have discussions. And then the first week that Sarge called in, I thoroughly enjoyed that show. It was just great. And since then, it's just gotten better and better. So
it is not easy being a host on Blog Talk Radio because there is very little advertising. Advertising that they say they do isn't as effective as Facebook. Because every time you go to a page on Blog Talk Radio, there's a Facebook link. But I'll bet you if you go to Facebook, there's never going to be a Blog Talk Radio link. And Blog Talk Radio does not engage, you know, in very astute advertising. So
actually there is. Because after I do my show, they always it always ends it with me being able to put something out there, and I can put it on Facebook, Twitter, and I put a link in there for Facebook, and I put in there that my show just ended. It was a good show. Give it a listen, and I post it, and it goes right straight to Facebook. So I do that every week.
I'm talking about this Facebook, of course, Twitter and Reddit and stuff like that you manually have to do.
Yeah.
But
I
Blog Talk
to
Radio, Blog Talk Radio to proactively be able to advertise Blog Talk Radio as a viable platform for people who do want to talk, I've never seen it.
No, and they should, actually, I would think, because they've got actually one of the best platforms out here that I've been able to find, because they've got a good studio. And this whole thing with the sound bites and everything else. When I first started, the sound bites were a certain level, and that was it. And I made a suggestion one day that they should put volume controls in there. Well, all of a sudden, volume controls were there, and my first thought was, "Wow, they listened to me." But they probably didn't. It was just probably an idea floating around in their head too. So,
people had the same idea that they finally did it.
Yeah.
I would like to buy Blog Talk Radio. I like a lot of its features. I don't have the money, but I would advertise the hell out of it, and I would introduce some new features, and I would make this, as soon as somebody came to the homepage, I would make it visitor-friendly. I would have a nice little tutorial video up there to let people know how to navigate around the site. I would advertise, as I said. I would create incoming and outgoing links. I would do that in order to, because people would love to talk a hell of a lot more than they want to type. Because of Facebook, you got to type. So this is a potential goldmine, but people aren't taking advantage of it the way.
I totally agree with that one.
So, and then, but you know what would happen? I would become like a multimillionaire, and my virtual wife would want half of it. Isn't that right, honey?
Maybe 25%.
Nah, see?
That'd be reasonable.
She's mellowed in her old age, see? Yeah, only 25%.
I don't want to be selfish or anything.
No!
At least she did. She didn't say, "You get 25%. I'll take the rest."
Isn't that something?
I'll
right.
Take 75.
I get 75%. Yeah.
Boy. Okay. Well, I'm coming up on the top of the hour. So.
Okay. Well, Bob, I'm going to bid you adieu. And Lori, I'm going to bid you adieu, too, and hope that both of you enjoy the rest of your night.
Okay. And you have a
good I can barely hear anything with that background going on. But, yeah, have a good night, everybody.
Either.
Yeah, you have
good
a
night.
Good night, too, and I'll talk to you later.
Thank you.
And I'll see you, Sarge. You're the one with the noise in there. So I will shut that one down. And you have a good one, Lorianne. I'm glad you called in.
I'm glad I did, too. Have a great night, you guys.
Okay, you too. God bless you, and I'll talk to you sometime again, I hope. I'll talk to you, everyone, later, and I'll... So I'm going to see if I can end this show now that we had ourselves a great show here. But I'm going to go ahead and do some ads that I had to do before I was going on this, and I'll see if I can get this ended here. And you have a great weekend, and I'll talk to you later.
Many of our veterans deal with significant personal issues on a daily basis. These can include any combination of combat-related, medical, or psychological issues, as well as stress from transitioning out of a highly structured environment. It is our hope that through our familiarity with these struggles, we can use our experiences and connections to help these vets move forward in a positive direction and enjoy a fulfilled life. Our vision is to put an end to homelessness and suicide that seems to be prevalent among our veterans. Our mission is to remember, honor, and serve our veterans and their families. Who we are is Warriors Serving Warriors, and we are comprised of veterans of our U.S. military with a variety of backgrounds and professions. Although we are a veterans group of Legacy Church here in Albuquerque, New Mexico, we accept vets from other churches and denominations. What we do is actively seek veterans who would like to be a part of our elite Christian group and share our desires to help and equip other veterans who are in need of assistance. We help other veterans who are in need of assistance with their transition to civilian life or have spiritual, physical, or emotional needs. We are currently proudly serving veterans in the Albuquerque metro area with future plans of expanding throughout the whole state of New Mexico. We meet every month to execute a strategically plan to reach our veteran community with the slogan, No Man Left Behind, giving them direction and or referring them to someone that could help them better their lives. If you know someone or are a vet yourselves, give us a call at 505-302-1999 or go to warriorservingwarriors.org. You can also email us at wswnmvets@gmail.com. That's Warriors Serving Warriors. Give us a call or join today.
Okay, everything just ended, so I can't even play my ending song, but God bless you. I will be back on Friday, and have a great night, and thanks Sarge and Lorianne and Joseph and everyone else who called. Have a great night. God bless you all.
Joe from Montana called. say it.